Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
For the record, yes, I am a card-carrying member of the ACLU, but the more important question is, why aren't you, Bob? Now, this is an organization whose sole purpose is to defend the Bill of Rights. So it naturally begs the question, why would a senator, his party's most powerful spokesman and a candidate for president, choose to reject upholding the Constitution? America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad, because it's going to put up a fight. It's going to say, you want free speech? Let's see you acknowledge a man whose words make your blood boil, who's standing center stage and advocating at the top of his lungs that which you would spend a lifetime opposing at the top of yours. You want to claim this land is the land of the free? Then the symbol of your country cannot just be a flag. The symbol also has to be one of its citizens exercising his right to burn that flag in protest. Now show me that. Defend that. Celebrate that in your classrooms. Then you can stand up and sing about the land of the free. I've known Bob Rumson for years, and I've been operating under the assumption that the reason Bob devotes so much time and energy to shouting at the rain was that he simply didn't get it. Well, I was wrong. Bob's problem isn't that he doesn't get it. Bob's problem is that he can't sell it. We have serious problems to solve, and we need serious people to solve them. And whatever your particular problem is, I promise you, Bob Rumson is not the least bit interested in solving it. He is interested in two things, and two things only: making you afraid of it and telling you who's to blame for it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you win elections. You gather a group of middle-aged, middle-class, middle-income voters who remember with longing an easier time, and you talk to them about family and American values and character. And you wave an old photo of the president's girlfriend, and you scream about patriotism. You tell them she's to blame for their lot in life. And you go on television, and you call her a whore. And if you want to talk about character, Bob, you better come at me with more than a burning flag and a membership card. If you want to talk about character and American values, fine. Just tell me where and when, and I'll show up. This is a time for serious people, Bob, and your 15 minutes are up. My name is Andrew Shepherd, and I am the president.
It is 25 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk-packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things, the home of righteousness. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. It is Monday, February 21st, 2011. And 11. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to get your talk on, as the youth say. 503-505-6964. You know, we should do it at some point. We should actually just have a segment just called Things the Kids Are Saying, where we find somebody who's probably not going to just yank our chain for cheap grins and fast chuckles, and have them tell us exactly what the slang is among the youth. Because, you know, I and, like, everybody over the age of 30, because it's hilarious, we all say, like, as the kids are saying, which is like the kids, if the kids are saying that, it's just coincidence. Like, if I'm right about that, it's just by accident. I mean, it's just that's sort of a stop clock being right twice a day kind of a thing.
Yeah, by the time most of us hear what the kids are saying, the kids aren't saying that anymore.
The kids aren't saying it, and they hold in the lowest of estimation those who are. I would say with the utmost disdain do they view those of us who talk about getting our grills done.
Would you say hella disdain?
Yes, but see, that's the thing, is I'm never going to quit saying that. Hell is never going to go away. Rick Emerson is not just bringing that back. Rick Emerson's keeping it back. It's like there's this here's somebody I could do without. There's somebody who just put up and we'll get to the, inexplicably, people are actually calling, so we'll get to the phones here in just a second, and we'll see what the day holds for us. Here's a guy I could do without, though. There's somebody who's put up a website, and it's called StopSayingFail.com.
Good for him.
I guess his whole thing is that he feels like he ought to quit saying fail, you know, sort of out loud when something bad happens. And I was telling that to my friend Trevor, he's a coworker of my wife's, and I said, hey, have you seen that website? It's called StopSayingFail.com. And he was like halfway through a Reuben sandwich and had a mouthful of beer, and he just like went, F that. He couldn't even finish choking down the food before he had to weigh in. He kind of F that, and then he finishes him and he goes, I'm never going to stop saying fail. It's like, I will never, ever quit saying fail. That will remain funny forever. And I said, I am on the same page as you are, my friend.
It seems I'm collecting this bunch of phrases that are just annoying me more and more. And I blame television, because as soon as someone does something funny on television, then like five other TV shows, somebody will do the same thing. And then people start doing it.
It literally becomes a thing that she said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I can now do without anybody saying, you know, I'm standing right here. And somebody saying, you see what I did there? And I mean, there's like six or eight of those that I'm just getting to the point where I cringe every time I hear them, because it's like, okay, it's not funny anymore.
You know who's responsible for the vast majority of those things in terms of interjecting them into the mainstream culture? That would be Mr. Aaron Sorkin. Because if you go back and watch like the really, watch the very early episodes of The West Wing, which I actually was on sort of a jag this weekend. I was watching seasons one and two of The West Wing, sort of skipping back and forth. And you go back even before that, you watch Sports Night. And Sports Night, even before Buffy, and even before, you know, like your Firefly and some of your more self-aware dialogue started to hit the airwaves, even before the Gilmore Girls, Sorkin was the first guy that I saw using a lot of that. But then almost immediately, and I'm not saying it was taken from him or anything, but he just had the luck to be there first, because almost immediately Whedon and Amy Paladino and, you know, they started to find their own, I think, their own authorial voice. And a lot of that phraseology, a lot of those, a lot of that type of delivery came to the fore right around that same, it was like in the mid to late 90s, you started hearing a lot of people. And then it reached its kind of apotheosis with The Office, I think. I think The Office is really just, can I just tell you that I spent a lot of time watching Parks and Rec this weekend, and here's the thing about that show. I'm sure it's not that it's a bad show, it's just like it is so distractingly similar to The Office that I find it difficult to enjoy.
And also, the first season really, really wasn't that good.
But here's the thing. Started with season two. Yeah. Didn't even watch season one because I was told that nobody should watch season one. Not that it was terrible, but just that season two was sort of a quantum leap forward. So watching a lot of season two Parks and Rec this week, and again, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just one of those. It's like trying to enjoy a really good Stone Temple Pilots record, where you just can't get past the fact that the guy just sounds like an electric sheep.
Well, the style is really tired.
Yeah.
I mean, Modern Family is a very, very funny show as well, and it somehow manages to rise above the fact that they use that same conceit as well. Some of the characters are really good, and the writing is really, really sharp. So it is very funny. But yeah, the entire style is really overused.
Well,
it was used up by the time Parks and Rec picked it up.
And there's the guy on Parks and Rec that's clearly supposed to be like the Jim character, and there's the guy who's like the Dwight character, and then there's the, you know, and there's the
Ron Swanson is the best character on that show, though, the boss. I love Ron Swanson.
It's not like it's a bad show. Again, if I had never seen The Office, and if The Office didn't exist, you'd look at Parks and Rec and go, God, what a great show that is. That's just a fantastic piece of television right there. And I guess it's unfair for me to view it through that prism now. I mean, it's like
no, that's not.
Well, but it is in a sense. In that, I don't know. I can't say definitively that somebody saw The Office and went, I'm going to write me a show just like that.
Well, they did. It's produced by the same people. It was created specifically by the same people who created The Office,
right,
or Amy Poehler.
But I don't know that that means that they were necessarily trying to clone it. Writers never let go of anything, so I'm willing to accept that that probably was sitting around in a guy's file, you know, somewhere. Like they just said, hey, you got any scripts you haven't done yet? And he goes, yeah, 8,000 or 9,000. I'm a writer. And they said, do you have anything that might work as an Office knockoff? And he went, and they said, we're trying to create a vehicle for Amy Poehler. Do you have anything that might work and that's sort of like a Dunder Mifflin thing? And he opened up his file cabinet to, like, the boulevard of discarded papers. And he said, well, I got this thing I wrote in 96 that went into turnaround. I got a green light, and then they shot a pilot that never aired. Is it like The Office? Yeah. Okay, we'll take it. Just like when they, you know, when a band comes out and it's sort of, like when you get a Nirvana or a Britney Spears, and suddenly there are eight or ten more bands that are just like that. Everybody goes, well, the record company put them together. And that really isn't the way it works most of the time. The way it works is there are so many, at any given moment, there's like 50,000 bands banging on the door of a record company, begging for a record deal. And the law of averages just dictates that of those 50,000 bands, there's going to be like 10 of them that probably fit the mold of what you're looking for. So you just, like, you just open up your Excel spreadsheet and you go, sounds like teen pop. Yes, no, I've got 3 of those bands and they're all in Florida. Let's go get them right now. You just keep files on that sort of stuff. So, I mean, maybe it was made to be a deliberate aping of The Office. Maybe it wasn't. I'm sure that it was produced that way. I'm sure the production design, that's a conscious decision. But it's not like it's a bad show. And
no.
So I feel like I'm kind of punishing the show for having been born too late, which I feel bad doing. I mean, because it's not their fault. Somebody else got there first. And the American Office went through that by dint of being after the British Office. So, God damn, I'm stupid. I can't just enjoy something. I just wish that I... Why can't I just sort of go, this makes me chuckle, and then just sit there in my big American fat pants with a box of Snackwells and be happy?
Because those people are idiots.
That's
who can
true.
Do that. No. You know, and I'm saying that as an ex... semi-ex-professional film critic who had to listen to that over and over again of people saying, you should just be able to sit back and enjoy something. Why do you have to, like, actually think about everything?
Semi-ex-professional film critic.
Yes.
What adjective applies to what noun in that sentence?
Well, I'm not actually working for any review outlets at the moment.
Per se?
Yeah, per se. But I'm still, like, I'm starting to write some stuff again, and maybe I might get back into it at some point. And I still kind of keep a toe in,
put a pin in it for now.
Yeah, I've put a pin in it.
We'll get to whoever this is on the phone. My face will really be red if it's somebody important or somebody whose name number I ought to recognize. There's no name attached to it. It just has the number. So we'll find out in just a second. Let's see. Coming up today, Hick Watch, Taser Watch. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is going to be here. We got Aaron Duran going to join us with The Week in Geek. Clue number one for this week's round of Name That Snack. We'll also reveal the snack from last week and the winner of last week's snack contest. That is brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them at ehvending.com. Right here in my... never nicotine-stained fingers. Do I have a little bit of Nathan Fillion news? We're going to get to. Let's see what else. Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Donald Rumsfeld says that the whole Iraq invasion thing might have been avoided. The father of the Juilliard-trained family group, the Five Browns, pleads guilty to child sex abuse. And personal blogs may be an endangered species.
Really? Is that being said by an electronic journalist or perhaps somebody associated with dead trees?
That's being reported by the New York Times.
That's hard to believe. All right, so that's all on the way today. Let's see, what else do we have? Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, I could advertise more, but really, what would be the point? It would be a lie. You wouldn't believe it. I would feel bad saying it, trying to pass off some sort of a half-baked deception as reality. In any event, it's 503-505-6964. We'll get to this call in a second. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed if that's your thing, if that's your pleasure, if that's what turns you on, you sick little monkey. It's Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Don at rickemerson.com. Or if you're one of the growing legion of fans, apparently, who refer to this as the Rick and Don. Soon to me, the Don and Rick show, apparently.
The Rick and Don show.
So you can contact Don at that, who apparently is your new god, at that email address. Text box open on the website. Also, Skype, you can do that. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our username at Skype. Well, I got some stuff to get through here, but we should see who this is. I really don't know who this is. Hello, sir, madam. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. How can I help you on this Monday?
Hello, Rick. This is Richard.
Hello.
Nobody important, just a subscriber.
No, no, don't ever say that. So you're the most important.
You are.
You're far more important than Dawn, for example.
Well, thank you. I just want to let you know I'm calling from the past about 2.5 weeks ago. I'm a little bit behind on the shows. So I'm bringing up a topic that I'm sure you've already hashed out and discussed with
okay.
Twitter and.
While you're there, will you remind me to pay my feed the parking meter in front of Powell's downtown at around 1:30?
You got it. I'll make sure I'm down there.
Great. Thank you.
So a few weeks ago when you and Don were discussing fetish videos, immediately what popped into my head was this fantastic fetish video that I've seen on the Internet. Okay, it's safe for work. It's on the YouTube, and I emailed you a link. It's this video. It's this techno video by the artist Benny Benassi titled Satisfaction. It is exquisite in every way.
All right.
Down to the section where basically the video features a lovely lady scantily clad using power tools, and most notable is the scene where they're operating jackhammers.
All right,
so be sure to catch that.
I've got this right here. So it says, here's the best fetish video ever and safe for work. Women using power tools. It features the I Barely Knew Her computer voice singing vocals.
Oh, it really is. If you haven't seen it or heard it yet, Rick, you really got to embrace it.
So it's like the Rolling Stones Satisfaction? Is that what the computer voice is singing?
No, it has nothing to do whatsoever with the Rolling Stones. It's a completely new contrivance.
So what is what song is it singing? An original composition of some sort?
It is.
Okay.
It's just a repeating of the computer voices, you know. It's very one of a kind. But you have to check it out.
Do you feel that I should? Do you feel I should watch it right now?
Well, of course, the visual medium is going to be lost to the audience who hasn't seen it. So, you know, maybe they can go check it out on their own. But certainly, the song has a rhythmic, almost not quite erotic quality to it.
All right, hold on a second. I'm going to actually post this on the RickEmersonShow.com right now, the blog at RickEmersonShow.com. That way, any and all who wish to watch may partake. And then Don and I will watch at least part of it right now before we move on to anything else, before we take one step further in today's program. Don, while I'm posting this link, you should say hello to Richard and, engage in banter with him in your trademark style.
Why, hello. Hello, Richard. I just pulled up the video, and I see that it begins with a scantily clad lady hammering in a nail. So,
yes, oh, it's exceptional. What? You know, I've been a long time user of tools and carpentry and so forth. And when I first found this video, I thought, wow, this was made for me.
So, Richard, what is your favorite power tool?
You know, I'd have to say it's my impact driver, the thing that looks like a drill but is used to drive hardware like screws and bolts and so forth.
Nice.
Quite possibly. So I had some other points here, but it seems that you've really lodged on to my fetish video. So
how can I not? I mean, really, yeah. it sounds very compelling. All right, let's see here. Okay, let's see. By the way, people are finding your statement that you've been a longtime user of tools to be lull inducing.
Yes.
We've got one message that says, "I've been a longtime user of tools," and then there's an ellipsis, and it just says primate. All right, let's see here. Okay, yes, tool-wielding ape Richard sent us a fetish video. All right, you go to RickEmersonShow.com, and it'll be first link, and it just says from listener Richard. Okay, I'm going to drop the music here, the music bed that's underneath the mono bed there, we call it. All right, I'm going to drop that. Okay, so I am now at YouTube. Don, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Push me, and then just touch me. Till I can get my satisfaction.
Push me, and then just hurt me. Till I can get my satisfaction. Satisfaction.
Okay, now, I know that you gave us a sort of a heads up as to what this was, and maybe I was looking for some sort of subtlety that... Maybe I was trying to read too much into it, or I just couldn't believe that it actually was this simple, but it really is just hot, scantily clad, what looked to be greased-up chicks using power tools while the specifics and... what do you call it? The specifications.
Like the lady right now using a belt sander.
And then it describes exactly what sort of voltage it takes and exactly what kind of grit paper it uses. Right now there's a woman using what looks to be a...
an angle grinder.
An angle grinder, and then there's a planer of some kind.
Yeah.
And so it's giving you all of the specifications and specifics about how the how the tool operates. Ooh, there's a slow motion jiggle thing going on while she's using that jackhammer.
Right.
Okay, here's the thing. There are guys who would probably pay hand over fist for this. I mean, there are probably guys that would just pay hundreds of dollars for a DVD or whatever of nothing but this. Wouldn't you agree, Richard?
I would agree. And I have to say, when I first saw it, it really reminded me of that. Isn't it Foxy Brown where they're reviewing this video where the women are firing AK-47s?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of when I saw that. And I thought, well, if you can do it with machine guns and bikinis, why not power tools?
Totally. All right. By the way, can I just say that one of these chicks looks a little bit like a friend of the Rick Emerson show from an earlier era and film critic Kim Morgan. I think it's the chick who actually has the angle grinder or whatever. The thing is, she's sort of, it's like a, some sort of a power sanding device.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Well, if those ladies have any more skill than just modeling, perhaps they can make a lucrative business of going and building on jobs. You know,
seriously.
Sites.
Now, let me just tell you this. When I lived in the teeming metropolis of Spokane, Washington, some years ago, there was a little bit of a controversy that happened because there were chicks who would come to your house and then they would clean your home in bikinis. They would come out and I think eventually they tried to do it nude, but then the man shut them down, as he always does, trying to get rid of fun. So the deal is that the girls would come to your house. And they would just they would be like in a sort of a two-piece bikini or something, showing a lot of skin.
Right.
And then, but then they would like clean your house. And I swear to God, they didn't do windows, but they did everything else. It's like they would clean the floor, they would do your dishes, they would do your vacuuming, your dusting. And there were guys who paid like $175 an hour, and that was for two girls. Additional girls, $35 extra per girl per hour. And I mean, that was just like low-level work that you probably could have done yourself. This is a thing that requires, I would say, a little bit of physical fortitude, and plus you got to have a certain skill to do this. And it's not like there aren't hot construction chicks out there. I mean, they exist, just like there's the occasional hot road flagger. So if you could get three or four of those in a stable, you could just take them all around the state and make yourself a pretty penny. Wouldn't you agree, Don?
I would, and I also would like to say... kudos to the people who made this video. The girls are all wearing proper eye protection.
No, it's really...
It is true. They are observing the what my wife calls PPE, personal protective equipment.
That's right. Yes. That's right. Now, it's job worth doing is worth doing correctly, sir. Excellent. Well, thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. How did you discover the Rick Emerson radio program?
Rick, I've been listening since 2007, and I think it was a Court and Bat Boy crossover, possibly way back when.
Excellent. Well, thank you, and it means a great deal to me. And please spread the word about this very fine radio program, if you would, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. There you go. That's listener Richard. Awesome. Oh, sorry. Well, and he's gone.
He was listening way back before it became the Rick and Don Show.
That's right. Back in we call that the prehistory. Yeah. It is the Rick Emerson radio program for today. It's 503-505-6964. If you'd like to join us, we'll talk to Aaron Duran here in just a few with the Week in Geek. Mr. Ryan White, Oregonian music editor, is going to be in the studio with us. I was going to put together a top five, and I might actually just spin the great big wheel of time and see because you accuse me, you don't accuse, because you complain quite a lot of the time about the top fives that I pick randomly whenever I just sort of pick the week from just from the ether, from the mist, from the void.
I'm hard to please.
It just seems like you find fault with a lot of those, so I might actually devise some series of like at the eye doctor's office where they go like number one, number two, and just through a process of elimination, just have you, without being able to see what the page actually says, have you pick the week from which we draw the top five.
Right.
So I do that here in just a bit. Let's see, we've already talked about the headlines. Let's see, we got your Hick Watch coming up, your Taser Watch coming up. I have no reason for mentioning this except that it's a thing. Well, okay, we'll test this. Don, do you want to hear anecdote number one or anecdote number two?
Well, without any...
Without any additional information,
without knowing
anything about them.
Number two.
Okay. Well, then we'll get to number one later on, but I will say anecdote number two, which is sort of two anecdotes in one. So you did choose wisely in terms of the actual content, in terms of the bang for your buck there.
So I'm getting a bargain.
It's like you're getting it's almost like having a Double Saver coupon something.
It's like getting an extra free taco.
It's like having one of those things at the casino where you get a free picture of you and Wade Newton or something. Yeah. No scarf. The scarf is extra. But so right now, at this very moment, it's around 1:47 p.m. Pacific time here in Portland, Oregon. Right now, you know what I'm doing? I'm here doing the show. You know what I'm not doing? I'm not at home having to deal with my landlord. You know who is? My wife. And you know why? Remember that time, I don't know, maybe a week ago, when I got my broken-ass refrigerator replaced with a brand-new refrigerator? So guess what that refrigerator's not doing?
Working?
Refrigerating.
Yeah.
So I put in some, and it was...
You mean the used refrigerator that they brought in to replace your old used refrigerator?
Well, okay, it is used, but he did buy it. It's not like he just went and found it in a landfill or something, to the best of my knowledge. Because he was talking about how the guy who sold it to him drove a real hard bargain. So I got the feeling that they stopped at, I don't know, some sort of a, you know, like an appliance store where they have new and then gently used items as well. Because he was talking about how the guy was just trying to screw him out of, you know, like an additional $12 for an ice-making unit.
Yeah, the last time I bought a refrigerator, by the way, I looked in the paper. I was working at a newspaper, and I looked in our classifieds, and I found this guy who, like, had a really good price on a refurbished refrigerator. And I called him up, and he sold me. And then he told me where he lived, and I drove out there. And it turned out he lived, like, in the middle of nowhere on a farm. And he had a whole barn full of, like, appliances that he fixed up and then resold. And it turned out to be, like, a perfectly good refrigerator. But it was, like, I had to drive, like, way out into, like, cow country to get my new fridge.
I've actually purchased, I've purchased computers and computer accessories that way in the past. Where it's, like, you just see a classified ad or, like, an online thing or whatever. And you go to a guy's house. And you get the feeling that maybe... You get the feeling that maybe not only does he not live in the home, but no one lives in the home. And it's just, it's one of those, they're just moving from vacant residence to vacant residence with a truck full of computer accessories that they are hurriedly refurbishing and then trying to sell. Because the guys always seem to like it's time is job one. Like it's of the utmost importance that they sell that thing like within the next hour. And he keeps glancing at his watch and shifting nervously from foot to foot.
That's when the realtor will come back to show the house again.
And occasionally asking you what your name is, you know, like in rapid succession twice as though he's hoping to trip you up somehow because he thinks you might not be on the level.
Anyway. What's your name? Rick Emerson. What's your name? Sergeant Johnson. Oh, damn it!
Give me your name. Last name first. It's like that trick that... Well, you never had to deal with this. You never had to deal with this problem, Dom. But you know the trick, if we're trying to figure out if a chick is lying about being of age?
Uh-huh.
You know how you do that? If you're trying to figure out, and it's like they use this in bars,
ask her what year she was born?
You don't ask her what year she was born. You ask her the year before the year she was born.
Oh.
Because if you're, because I would just go 1972, because you know it. But if you're like in a bar, and if somebody's come with a fake ID, or somebody, you know, that you think they're trying to get into to a place where they shouldn't be allowed, or again, you think that maybe she's rounding up to 18, you just say, what was the year before the year you were born? And that's how you get, that's the tell right there. That's the way you can, a little bit of free wisdom from Rick Emerson to y'all out there. It's another arrow you can put in your quiver, kids.
I may not really have much need for that, but it's good to know.
Not today.
Not today.
One never knows what the future holds. I'm just saying.
The thing about being female is I did have those moments in my past where I found out after the fact that the fellow was much, much younger than he had portrayed himself as being.
But he was legal, yes.
Sure. And the thing is that... it's like they're guys. So, you know, it's a horrible double standard, but you don't really have to worry about it that much.
Well, see, that's what a lot of school teachers have thought over the years.
At least that was the case, you know, back in the 30s when I was boffing 15-year-olds.
I don't really know that that's so much the case now, because then he's got some jackass friend or perhaps a dad or a stepdad. You know, a guy that calls him sport, not son, who will inevitably find out about the boffing and then be all pissed off and, you know, in rage with male jealousy, and then he'll call the man.
Did you personally ever, like, run into that situation, though? Because that is...
Of an underage?
Well, it is a freaky, freaky situation when you are with someone that you know is a little bit younger than you.
Right.
But they're, like, you know, 21 or whatever. And then they kind of admit that maybe they might not actually be of age to drink.
Actually 21.
And then they concede that maybe they might not actually be 18. And then you find out they haven't even actually gotten out of high school yet.
Well, because...
And you're like, what have I done?
Well, see, because, like, once that they admit that, like, they're not old enough to be drinking, then you just start to think, like, well, okay, if you're willing to lie about that... Yeah. And that's just to get, you know, to get your drink on. Then,
when you yourself are only, say, 25, and the guy says he's like 21 or 22, and then you find out he says, well, I really won't be 21 like for another couple of months. That's okay. Maybe you kind of buy that because he's a guy, so he wants
right.
to. Then you find out he's like, then he admits like maybe being 18. And then you're like, okay, where is this going? And then you find out. It's like, no.
What are you asking me here?
Well, I just wondered if you've ever you ever gone down that particular rabbit hole?
So to speak.
Yes.
Well, yes and no in the sense that I have had occasions in my life where I was a little suspicious about the girl's age. And I have actually, not a lot, but I have on at least one occasion, there was one time that I did ask a girl to show me her ID. And I just felt so weird about it. But it was like, you know what? I'd rather feel weird for 10 seconds than weird for 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And there was one occasion where I actually just said, I said, look, please don't take this the wrong way. You know, I just, but this sounds weird and there's no way for it not to sound weird. Could I see your ID? Because I'd feel a lot better about it. And it was like, you know, it was like 18 in 2 months or something. But you know what? Hey, there's no almost there.
Yeah,
either
not so much.
Either legal or not. And I'm not just saying this because it's the sort of thing that's being archived and preserved digitally and could be subpoenaed by law enforcement. I have never been with anybody underage. I've actually told this story before. I don't have time to do the whole thing now. There was one time. And boy, how many stories just start that way? How many awful, awkward stories start with? Well, there was this one girl. There was this one time that I went to meet up with a fine lady, and bottom line is, she invited me over for her birthday party, and I thought it was like 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st birthday. You know, I thought it was maybe, and it was like at her house, you know, where her family was there. But that doesn't really mean anything. You know, a lot of college age people live at home, or it's like even if you don't live at home, you go back home because it's your birthday and your family's whatever. So I didn't really read anything into that, and I forget exactly what the sort of. I forget what the kind of tell was, like when the tip-off moment came. But you know, it was her birthday, and I said, so, you know, your birthday, you're going to be, you know, blah, 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 you're going to be, maybe I asked her if he was going to be doing some drinking, or you're going to be going out, hitting the bars with your friend or whatever. She goes, oh, I won't be able to do that for a few years. And it was that whole, that thing of like, you feel like Roy Scheider on the beach, you know, and the camera's pulling out and zooming in, and you're going, how many? How old might you be? And she said, oh, I'm 16. And I went, wow, nothing had transpired. Nothing had taken place. But really, here's the thing. Let's have no illusions about this. It would have. If I had not known, because clearly she didn't care. If nothing had been said to me about the fact that she was that night turning 16. It's not that she was 16 turning 17.
Yeah.
It was 15 turning 16. Now, to be fair, because I'm sure this is the sort of distinction that matters to the court. I was 21. But I mean...
But
you know, still.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
yeah.
that ain't right.
Yeah.
That ain't right. In no way is that right. I mean, that's all kinds of not right. And so I just said, oh, hey, okay, that's great. Look, I, and then I started skipping ahead to the after sex lies, and there had been no sex. Look at the time. I've got a meeting tomorrow. Boy, did I mention that my mother's in town? Also, I'm dying. I have to buy. And I just ran to the car.
Of course I'll call you.
Yeah. No. And that's the thing. And that was, you see, and that was a time before, like, I don't know if it was before email. What year would that have been? The 94, 95? But it was before you had, like, you didn't have your BlackBerry or, you know, you didn't. So that was a time where you could actually, if you wanted to as a guy, you could pretty easily, in one moment of sanity, purge yourself of the future temptation or whatever by getting rid of the number. Because it wasn't like it was going to be in an address book in my Mac or something at that, you know, 1994 or something. I was able to just be like, tear up the number, throw it away. I think I actually threw her number in little pieces out the car window. And that was it.
That really is true. I haven't really thought about that. But in this age where a girl can say to a guy, well, here, let me just put my number into your phone.
Ooh, bad idea.
You can't ever, like, just lie and say, oh, I lost it. Or just pretend to yourself that they never existed or whatever. Because
yeah,
it's just
no.
going to be there. Plus, now they can probably call you as well.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't want to, yeah, you don't want that.
By the way, you notice how easily you and I are able to, like, jump in, like, 5 easy steps from talking about your refrigerator to talking about underage sex.
Yes. One of our
what is wrong with us?
One of our rare talents, Don. Well, in any event, well, I don't have time. We have to get to Aaron Duran here with the Week in Geek in a second. We'll talk to Mr. Ryan White, but I will just say this. So last week I told this whole thing about the refrigerator coming and the whatever and replacing it. So I don't know if it's like, I should ask Joe Squires about this. I don't know if it's a thing with the outlet. I mean, it doesn't seem like it could be because it's not like the fridge isn't working as such. I mean, the light turns on and I mean, it's like it cools stuff. But the new fridge, which is used, but still, is doing exactly the same thing the old fridge did in that things in the freezer get very, and the dials are turned to maximum or whatever. Things in the freezer get very, very cold. They just don't freeze. And things in the refrigerator get kind of cool, but not actually cold enough to really be, you know, to count as actual refrigeration. So I finally just called the landlord. I'm like, hey, like, I hate to be a dick about this, but, like, remember all that stuff the old fridge was doing? The new fridge is doing exactly the same thing. Which, by the way, I discovered in exactly the same way when I took a big mouthful of milk. And it wasn't bad, but it was warm. And that's where you freak out a little bit, because then you're waiting for the bad taste to come, and it didn't. But, I mean, how could the same thing be happening?
That is really strange that the same thing would happen.
It's like Die Hard 2, you know, but like in just the small confines of the refrigerator alcove in my home.
Are you sure they didn't accidentally leave the same refrigerator behind that they said they were taking out?
Just painted it quickly and stuck it back in.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is demonstrably a different fridge. And I believe the guy when he says he bought it. I don't think he just stole it from somewhere, from the dump or something, because that would just be more work for... Like, the landlord has no motive to just stick me with a fridge he doesn't know work, because it's like... Because he is the landlord, so I'm not having to fix it. I mean, it's an inconvenience for me, but it's a bigger inconvenience for him, and it's time and it's money. So I can't imagine he would have given me one that he knew was going to do this to me, because now he's at the house right now having to deal with that. So the good news is that I am not.
Well, Annie, you're right. This may be something that Joe Squires could tell us about, because I know very little about electricity. So my immediate thought is perhaps not enough cold molecules are coming out of your outlet and flowing through the tubes into your fridge.
Well, I mean, how do I know? Maybe that's the case. I mean, it's like, Lara said, well, is there just enough power to keep it, you know, kind of working, but not enough power to keep it really running the full way? And I said, sure, maybe. I have no idea. How would I know that? I mean, that is the reason. That is really the reason.
I feel like they don't really work that way.
I think it's
But the thing is, I don't know.
See, it's an either-or state, yeah. I would think, but I don't really know the answer to that. I have no way of figuring it out. So I'll just say that, and so that the second half of it real quick is this is not all that interesting. I will just say that I had the greatest moment. I wish I'd been filming this. Do you ever have these things happen to you at home, and you're like, damn, I wish that I'd had my iPhone out, or I wish I just had, like, a webcam sort of... You know, how many times do we say that? Like, something happens here in the studio during a break, and we're like, oh, we should have been filming during a break. So I was up in my home office last night, and I hear this, like, sound, and I'm like, what the hell? And then I realized my home office is directly above the basement where the laundry stuff is. And I go down, and I swear to God, my washing machine was doing that Mr. Mom thing.
Yeah.
Where it was, like, charging across the floor at me, because I guess the load had become unbalanced or something, which had never happened to me at our home now with this washing machine. And it's like, I swear to God, it was doing the thing of, like, it had walked itself forward, like, 2 feet, and the hose was very nearly at the breaking point in the back. It was so weird. It's like, I'd never had that happen to me in my life. It was exactly like the Mr. Mom sequence. So that's going through my head as I'm, like, pushing the thing back, and I'm, like, reaching forward and trying to open the thing so it stops spinning, you know, afraid that the thing's going to explode, and then I'm going to be, like, having to two-fist it with the hoses. It's all very weird.
My washing machine has done that a couple of times. And my problem is that my washer and dryer are next to each other in this little narrow alcove with the water heater that are built just for that in the apartment, with these double accordion doors that fold open and fold close over.
Right.
So if it starts to do that, and if I don't get it soon to it quickly enough, it will walk forward enough that it will block the door so I can't open the door.
Oh, that's creepy.
And so then the thing's going bam, 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 bam. And I'm like trying to reach around it, and I can't get purchase because I can't get
to it. The leverage is all wrong because you can't reach in enough.
Yeah. And so all I can do is kind of like snake one arm in and flip the lid up so at least it will stop pounding, and then just like kind of call Patrick and go, could you come help me push the refrigerator back? Because I can't get at it.
And then do you have the whole thing of like where you are afraid that everything like that is going to blow up? Any appliance or piece of mechanical equipment that is operating incorrectly, you feel like it's going to explode and kill you.
Now that I rent, I don't worry about that quite as much. I realize that just the thing that it's going bam, 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 and you know, I'll get to it in time. But when I actually owned the washer, and it was upstairs on the second floor, because we had the washer dryer in sort of our bedroom suite on the second floor. And I'd be downstairs, and I'd hear it doing that. And I'd be running up the stairs trying to get to it, because I was absolutely convinced, I don't know what I thought it would do, that it would just spin out of control, go through
the
wall.
Shoot through the roof of your house like the space shuttle?
Yeah, because I, you know, it was an old house, and I don't know, and there was just like sort of a little window behind it that the dryer vent went out. So I think there was this fear it would just work its way through the wall and plummet down into the neighbor's yard and
kill
someone.
I mean, you never let it go that far, so I mean, you really, you know, you have no way of knowing. All right, well, without further ado, we're so terribly over behind already. We should do this. Where the hell is my Star Wars movie? There we go. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. From Geek in the City, Dot com, purveyor of all things wonderful and nerd-like. Our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran, joining us here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hello, good sir. How was your weekend?
Hello. My weekend's fantastic. How have you been?
Well, it's been a...
Apart from all the underage sex in there and stuff.
I was going to say, apart from all the appliances turning on me in my home, I haven't even got to the weirdest thing about my weekend, but we'll talk more about it later on. It was the weekend was good. It was just, I did... Well, we've already talked about underage sex and about our technical incompetence. I will just say that I had this drug mishap over the weekend too. So, Don takes a pill, a substance called, I won't say narcotic, but a drug called trazodone.
I don't anymore, but
you
I
don't.
Used to.
Why did you stop taking trazodone?
Because it made me feel really super dopey the next day.
Yeah, like you just sit and stare into the middle distance for hours.
Yeah, so I asked for something different, which now makes me feel dopey in a completely different way.
So I was just on, I guess it was, maybe it was Friday or it could have been Saturday. I don't even remember. But they give me the trazodone in these huge 100 milligram doses, which like I don't think anybody needs.
No.
And, I would take like a quarter of one of those when I was taking it. And it's been sitting in my cupboard for months and months now because I didn't really take it anymore. But I would take like a quarter of like 25 milligrams or something. Certainly not 100. But then on Friday, it's just like I had the whole thing Thursday. My brain just felt all foggy and whatever. And I thought, well, you know what? I just need to reset my sleep schedule. I just need to do a hard reboot. So I forced myself to go to bed, sleep for a solid 8 hours during the time when most people sleep a solid 8 hours. Start from scratch. I don't know what was going on in my head, but I thought that the solution to that was just to take a whole 100 milligram trazodone. And I swear to God, I just spent most of Saturday just sitting in the chair at home, just kind of going, just staring at a wall. Like, I was basically, Philo and I were on the same page for most of the weekend, just staring blankly at the ceiling, doing nothing. So that was so my weekend was good or bad. I don't really remember enough of it to be able to say. So how about you, sir? How was your weekend? Did you do anything exciting?
Well, so far, yeah. Not really, no, but it was nice to do absolutely nothing, so which is something I rarely get to do. So,
hey, by the way, before we do anything else, we should mention you got you have a signing coming up for La Brujera, you and James Sinclair, the artist. You guys are going to be doing a signing at the Beaverton Things from Another World, yes?
Yeah, we're calling it the West Side signing this time. The James who manages the Beaverton Things from Another World asked if we could do a West Side signing. So on Saturday, May 5th from noon to 3 p.m., you can see myself as well as the artist James Sinclair signing copies of La Brujera number 1 out at the Beaverton Things from Another World.
He should refer to himself as that all the time, the artist James Sinclair.
Well, I'm a lot better at mentioning what he does. He's like, yeah, I just draw the pictures, as if it's a skill that any person can do, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm always like, I'm amazed anytime anyone can create anything with any kind of semblance of life on a completely flat 2D surface.
By the way, if anybody wants to hear more about La Brujera, you can watch the Outlook. I don't know if it's up as of today, but it will be in a day or so if it's not as of right now. You go to OutlookPortland.com. You'll be able to see the most recent episode of Outlook Portland, which featured Aaron Duran and James Sinclair, as well as Ben Jabarker from the Ultra Egos Society. So that's going to be it.
And the Paul Stanley duck.
That's right. I forgot all about that, the Paul Stanley duck.
Yeah.
Now I have to see... if it's up, because somebody pointed out that I said last week that I was going to play the Paul Stanley duck doing an editorial, and I never did. So I got to go. I got to track it. I got to find it.
I love the Paul Stanley duck.
You know who doesn't is Cheryl. So I think the Paul Stanley duck's being phased out. It's out of my hands.
Well, it's because you're going to introduce Cuddly Cthulhu.
There's a Cuddly Cthulhu doll apparently that I'm going to be using.
I think Paul Stanley duck needs his own show, his own webisodes.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
That's one of the, but here's the thing is that's one of those idiot Ziggy with a hat things that probably people would just latch onto and it would become like some huge deal that like got 1,000 digs, or something. And just because people are dumb.
Keep in mind
that's coming from me. So,
yeah, you could do like Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Bathtub
or Kiss Meets the ooh, OMG. You know what there ought to be? Wait for it. Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Menace. There you go. Mm. Maybe not. Okay, I gotta workshop that some more.
Yeah.
What is coming up in the world of geek news, sir?
Well, there's a few things coming up in the world of geekdom. The quick little recap, Spider-Man has a new job. Link's going to make you all feel old, and we've developed shields.
Fantastic. Hold on, let me just see if I have some sort of transitional noise for the... No, I don't. Okay, we'll just plunge on into it.
All right, well, let's just jump right in. As I mentioned a few weeks back, the Fantastic Four are down to three with the death of the Human Torch, Johnny Storm. He will flame on no longer. The flame's been put out. You can play that sound now if you want.
Wait, hold on. Flame's been put out. Wait, just...
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right.
We have Rufus Wainwright, though, so...
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Johnny Storm is... he is dead, demised, and Spider-Man is joining the Fantastic Four, or as they're going to be known from now on, the Future Foundation. That is
really?
The new team. Yeah, the Future Foundation. Yep.
Because they didn't want to have to change their logo with the Fs?
Yeah, pretty much. It's still going to be FF, and now they're going to be dressed in these stark black and white costumes. So it will be Mr. Fantastic, the Invisible Woman, the Thing, and Spider-Man. The amazing.
And this
Don and Mike there.
And this is starting when?
Next month. Spider-Man joins the FF, the Future Foundation, next month in Marvel Comics.
This is one of those things where it's like I get the feeling that the Nerd Brigade is probably
plus he has his own book where he goes by himself. So it's just kind of Spider-Man overload over in the House of Ideas
at
Marvel.
Is this because like in some weird cross promotional way? Is this to pimp like the next Spider-Man movie that's coming up, or is this because of that thing on Broadway, or is it just because like? Is it something that would have seemed like legitimately like a good idea to somebody in the conference room?
It's actually a good idea. Out of all the things you mentioned, I, believe it or not, am most interested about reading Spider-Man on the team because the writer behind it, his name is Hickman. He's actually a really talented, really talented writer. So I'm really curious to see what he does with Spider-Man on the team. Actually has potential to be pretty interesting because everyone kind of knows Spider-Man's background. His Uncle Ben was killed when he didn't do the right thing. So he's kind of had this guilt his entire life by having his father figure killed. Well, in the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man's basically going to become the new big brother to Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman's kid. I just forgot his name now.
Invisotot.
Baby Richards, I just forgot his written name.
Okay.
Who watched his uncle, you know, was the only person around and watched his uncle get killed fighting the bad guys.
Well,
so the little kid is one that has to really deal with the death. And Spider-Man's going to step in as basically, like, you know, I've been there. Your family leads crazy lives. So I'm going to do what I can to make sure that you have the most stable life possible. So it might be a marketing gimmick, with a good storytelling, with a good writer, it could work. So I'm actually kind of curious to see how it goes down.
And as far as his own need for a father figure, Mr. Fantastic has those long, stretchy arms, so he can always give Spider-Man hugs.
That's right. Mr. Fantastic can hug the whole world when he's not trying to keep Galactus alive.
Hey, let me ask you this, on the Spider-Man tip. So I may or may not, probably will, though, in mid-March. I'm going to be in New York for a few days. And so there's two factions sort of developing. One is the you must see Spider-Man turn on the dark because it may be gone soon and it's already infamous, you know, regardless. And, you know, how can you not see it and report back to your geek brethren? And then there's the other faction, which is basically just me saying, yeah, but it's like $135 a ticket. Also, it apparently sucks. And it's 2.5 hours of my life that will never be returned to me.
And you also have to realize that every review that we've heard have been from various press screenings and kind of pre-official openings. It hasn't officially opened yet. And as of the last report, they are rewriting a third of it.
That's the thing is they're rewriting like 35% of the script. Yeah, because it's still in previews. So, I mean, the thing that they've been reviewing that is actually horrible and, you know, and sucks, even if that is true, even if it's comically bad now, there's no guarantee that that'll actually be the version that I see. So I just it's one of those things where if it was like only 35 minutes long or if it was only $25 for a ticket, one of those factors might be enough to get me to see it. I would almost choke down the ticket price if it wasn't also going to consume like hours of my time that night.
Yeah, honestly, if it's when are you going to New York?
It's like the Ides of March.
Well, you don't have to stay through the whole thing. You could leave. Oh, yeah, you would.
But that's the thing is I can't. No. I stay all the way to the end just because I want to be able to criticize. I don't want somebody to go, well, did you stay to the end of Napoleon Dynamite? And I say, no. And they go, well, you can't criticize it then. So
you can just leave at the first cast member death or something. You know?
It just seems like it's one of those things that if I'm going to go, I'm going to have to watch the entire thing so that I can give like a full-throated review of it, however good or bad it may end up being.
Honestly, I would when you're there, if it opens, I would save my money and go watch Trey Parker and Matt Storm's Book of Mormon, the musical.
Well, that's first on the agenda. That's like the thing is that's way more. That's like several thousand notches above seeing Spider-Man Turn of the Dark. The Spider-Man Turn of the Dark would just just be sort of as an adjunct to everything else if I ended up with some free time. Like, I am not going to carve time out of just a few days in New York to go see a goddamn Spider-Man as an Egyptian moth song and dance number or whatever the F it is. Let's see. We're getting so terribly behind here, but let's talk about Link. So Link makes everyone feel old as of what, today?
Yeah, just to make everyone in that room and behind this mic feel completely ancient, today is the 25th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda.
God damn.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. You know who's, you know, here's the great thing about that. You know who I'm going to be able to make feel really, really old with that is Sarah. Yeah. So Sarah's just now getting to that point where she's going to start to see her heroes dying and all of her childhood totems flaking away into dust.
Oh, yeah. No, I suspect in a few years, Sarah will be the person on forums complaining about the raping of her childhood when she has to go see the live action Gem movie.
Probably. Or when they do like, when they do that, or when they do like a Labyrinth musical or something on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some horrible
they remake The Dark Crystal.
Some horrible movie about New Kids on the Block.
Completely. Here's the thing about The Legend of Zelda is, you know, there's been so much made in the last few years about how women have finally started to become, like, you know, 46% of gamers or whatever it is, and that they finally, like, cracked the secret for getting girls to play. But even back then, 25 years ago, I won't say most, but I'd say a huge number of the Zelda players that I knew were women. Women were very, just like they are, just like my wife is much, much more into like the Lego Star Wars and stuff now than I am, because it was a puzzle solving thing. It wasn't just quests. It had that Mist Riven kind of a thing going on, which did appeal to women far more than most video games at that time.
The other thing that pulled a lot of women into The Legend of Zelda, which is kind of ironic when you realize that there's that big joke that women don't play role-playing games. When you factor in the reason why Legend of Zelda was so popular with women back in the day is that it wasn't all about just gaining experience and killing. It was the story that kind of pulled you into it. And that historically has been how you get more and more women to play games, is you give them, you know, a story and plot, dialogue.
Well, video games for women are kind of like porn for women. You know, guys basically just need aim, point, shoot, repeat. And that's, repeat after 11 minutes.
5-minute increments.
Yeah.
We want to know what the relationships are.
Women want to know, why do these two characters, what is their backstory? How did they meet?
Shoot them in the face.
Okay. And finally, today.
Yeah.
I don't know. Isn't there a third thing?
Oh, yeah. Finally, this is just a quick little sciencey nerd bit. Scientists at Yale University have developed a device that is able to absorb energy from incoming laser attacks.
Oh. So,
I don't know. Are there incoming laser attacks?
I don't know, but I just love the fact that we've already developed shields before we've developed phasers. So Hawkins needs to get off his ass, get the warp drive going, because I need to go into space and boldly go where no man has gone before.
This sounds like one of those things where we've developed the shield against a thing that isn't being used to threat, you know, that no one's
isn't
pointing
it?
At us.
That we know of.
Well, that's true. Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I mean, I guess.
That they've told us about.
Everybody on Alderaan thought, oh, it's going to be a bright, shiny day.
Well, it was right there at the very end.
Yeah.
All right, so maybe this is because there is some sort of a weapon being designed elsewhere that we are not aware of. We haven't been privy to that information, and so the shield is going to come in handy. This is really the government looking out for us, perhaps.
Sure it is.
Okay, they got that thing. There's that company that Intellectual Ventures is the name of this company in Seattle, where I swear to God they have that laser beam that shoots down mosquitoes infected with malaria.
Yeah.
I
want scientists developing a shield-absorbing laser, because the British keep launching satellites called Skynets. We need all the help we can get.
You know, we ought to just develop some sort of a shield that prevents Chinese-made consumer goods containing lead from coming into the country. Why isn't there one of those? At the border, just some sort of a laser that just senses pacifiers made out of titanium.
Or a weapon that stops Japanese people from making robots.
There you go.
That's what's going to doom us.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
That's the other thing I was going to mention. They're at the Consumer Electronics Show this year. They developed some exoskeletons that help, you know, people that are hurt or disabled walk, which is all well and good until you realize the company named themselves Cyberdyne.
Yeah. We just need some sort of Algernon ray for Japan, you know? just for a few years. Just give them a good gap.
Just slow them down a little.
Just taking a breather in terms of the intellectual development over there. I think that's what we need.
Or use Godzilla.
Godzilla. All right, you can find out more about it by going to geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com. Aaron Duran, and don't forget, he'll be doing a signing of La Brujera, issue number one, with James Sinclair. That is coming up. Is that Saturday, March 5th, the Beaverton Things from Another World?
Yes, from noon to 3.
Awesome. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
There you go. That is Aaron Duran, kids. All right. Back after this with Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian and some news with Don Taylor. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Washington came first and he was perfect. John Adams kept us out of war with France. Jefferson made Louisiana Purchase. In 1812, James Madison kicked the British in the pants. James Monroe told Europe they could suck it. John Quincy Adams looked just like his dad. Andrew Jackson got rid of all the Indians. Van Buren served one term, but he wasn't bad. William Henry Harrison died early. John Tyler annexed Texas from Mexico. James K. Polk fought Mexico to keep it. Taylor was a Mexican war hero. Fillmore gave a boat to Commodore Perry. Pierce repealed the Missouri Compromise. Buchanan saw the Civil War's beginnings. Lincoln saved the Union, then he died. Johnson just survived impeachment. General Grant enjoyed a drink or two. Rutherford B. Hayes ended Reconstruction. Garfield was assassinated in 1882. Arthur suspended Chinese immigration. Cleveland made the railroad people squirm. Harrison signed the Sherman Antitrust Act. Grover Cleveland served another term. McKinley kicked the Spanish out of Cuba. Roosevelt was handy with a gun. Taft was big and fat and had a mustache. Wilson kicked some ass in World War I. Harding said let's laissez-faire with business. Coolidge made the roaring 20s roar. Hoover screwed the pooch in the Great Depression. Roosevelt beat the Nazis in the war. Truman dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. Eisenhower kept the commies well in hand. Kennedy was killed by a magic bullet. Johnson murdered kids in Vietnam. Nixon was a sweating, filthy liar. Ford gave Nixon pardon for his crimes. Carter lusted in his heart for peanuts. Reagan won the Cold War and lost his mind. George Bush Sr. poked at Saddam Hussein. Clinton gave an intern a cigar. W's legacy is a work in progress. That is all the presidents so far. In the year 2005, we're out of money. Somewhere surely freedom's on the march. I don't like to make political statements.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then I swear to God, we just spent like 4 minutes talking about Will Wheaton. Let's break. Sometimes it's like, do you ever just catch yourself doing that? Where it's like we're here in the break in this show. Like just now, we just finished talking to Aaron Duran about Spider-Man. And then we go to a break where Jonathan Colton is playing. And Don and I are sitting here with Ryan White talking about Will Wheaton. And you just step back and you go, God damn, I'm a useless human being. I mean, yeah. I just, how much more me do I possibly need to be? Yeah. You know?
It seems like it wasn't that long ago that I was trying to convince Mike Russell that I wasn't a geek.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you? I mean.
Well, because he and our coworker, David Stroop, they would just sit there and they would talk about Star Wars all day. And I was like, nah, I'm not into any of that stuff. I don't know. No, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. You're a geek. I'm like, I'm not a geek. He's like, you have Viggo Mortensen. You have an Aragorn screensaver on your computer. I'm like, that's because Viggo Mortensen is cute. It's not because I'm all into Lord of the Rings. And eventually I had to realize, yes, I'm incredibly dorky.
I was going to ask why you would bother to do that. And I don't mean like in a sort of geek pride way. I mean, it's like, how could you have lived in denial that long? How did you deceive yourself?
I lived in denial of being geeky a long, long time. Even when I married my husband, it was like, well, sure, we met at a science fiction convention, but I was just there drinking in the bar. I don't actually read science fiction.
Was this sort of like, was geekdom like the Playboy that you only read for the articles?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. You got like an Ed Grimley thing going on with your hair, by the way, just FYI. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Monday, February 21st, 2011. Still to come and get your Hick Watch, Taser Watch. Let's see, clue number one in this week's Name That Snack contest. There you go, and that's over. That happened, and we got the speaking of geekdom. It is Nathan Fillion news. I mean, it's not like groundbreaking. It's just sort of. It's Seamus sent it to me this morning. It's just sort of interesting. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Ooh, actually, hold that thought. No one say anything because I'm just going to go ahead and play a little something here because we've been asking Ryan White from the Oregonian to come up with a music bed with which he will be introduced, and because that has not been chosen yet. You receive the music from Blackula Strikes.
Oh, right. Nice.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you on this fine Monday? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good.
Let me ask you this. With the kid, is it a thing where you eventually, does your kid, A, take up less sort of moment-to-moment time, meaning you get more sleep? Is it, B, that you just adjust and your body learns how to do more with less? You learn how to get by on fewer hours of shut-eye? Or is it, C, that you just lose perspective because you don't remember feeling any other way and this is your new existence now?
No, it's C.
Okay.
It's, you know, I was celebrating briefly on Friday because I work from home on Fridays because by then all the A&E copy and the Sunday copy and everything else is cleared and I've just got to do some blogging. And so I'll work from home and watch her. And I was really happy because she's slowly gotten better at just sitting and playing by herself. And I can get emails answered and stuff like that at the dining room table. And then I looked up on Friday and she was gone because she's mobile now. And she had just crawled off.
Is she like in one of those not strollers, but what are those things where it's like, you know.
It's like a saucer?
Is it a stroller where it's like, you know, it's like a thing that encircles them that has wheels?
No, she's just crawling.
Okay.
So I looked over and like I couldn't find her, and she had, while I was staring at the computer, crawled under the table and was at my feet. And then I slid her out from underneath her and realized how dirty the floor was, and had to go and change her. And
that's where you just realize what's probably lurking in the bottom of that carpet, you know, or what's underneath the bed that you probably don't notice that would fit perfectly in her mouth.
Oh no! Yeah, it's like, you know, she's just materializing things from other dimensions at this point. I looked down; she had this ball of tinfoil from what looked like a Hershey's Kiss, and we never have Hershey's Kisses in the house. I was like, well, where did that come from?
Previous occupant. You sure that was tinfoil from a Hershey's Kiss?
It was tinfoil from something.
Okay. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk about all that is coming up in the Oregonian and happenings in the world of music and so forth. But we've been here for like, I don't know, like 9 hours. We haven't actually done any news.
No.
So who votes for news? Ooh, I do. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says if the Bush administration had known there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, it probably wouldn't have decided to invade in 2003. He also criticized the source known as Curveball, an Iraqi defector who admitted his claims that Iraq-possessed WMDs were false.
Curveball?
Yeah, they called him. He was codenamed Curveball.
Did Tim Matheson just walk down the line and just, your name is Flapjack. Your name is Curveball. Okay. I'm sorry, this is Rumsfeld 1?
Yeah.
The intelligence community talks to hundreds of people. They have human assets such as this man. Some are honest, some are dishonest. Some do it for money. Some do it for self-aggrandizement. Some do it apparently to lie.
Here's the thing about Donald Rumsfeld. I know that I'm not supposed to like him, but I do. I just do. And I'm not saying he's not evil. It doesn't even seem like he's evil so much as he is just sort of... he's just very matter of fact. He seems very much like Pat Buchanan in that way.
I would like that quote a lot more if he had been talking about the porn industry.
I like that we report on stories like this as if he might actually be telling the truth about something.
No. I mean,
like we just say this, like, well, you know, Donald Rumsfeld said this, and then we all just go, yeah.
See, and I think we like skip right past the whole, like, you know, Bob, is it true what Secretary Rumsfeld is saying? Is there, you know, are there, you know, what are the underpinnings of this state? Like, we just know it. He's full of crap.
Yeah.
But I think to us, there's a difference between maliciously full of crap, and then there's unknowingly full of crap, which is sort of the difference between Dick Cheney and Ari Fleischer. And then there's just like obliviously full of crap, which is George W. Bush. And then there's Rumsfeld. And Rumsfeld seems very much, and maybe I'm just reading too much into him, but the vibe I get of Rumsfeld, I get this sort of weird Tom Hagen vibe off of him. Like that's just like that's the gig, you know, like that's who was paying him. That's who he worked for. He was hired to do a job, and you know what? He was hired to be an ally of the Bush administration, and that meant just like anybody that crossed their path that was perceived to be an enemy just got whacked into kibbles and bits. And it wasn't personal. It was just the job. And that part of the job is that the rest of your life you keep your mouth shut about the appropriate things and you toe the line forevermore.
Well, just my question is since, you know, now he's like going, oh, we probably wouldn't have done it if we'd like actually had the right information. Are they trying to position themselves now, you know, for 2012, that they'll be able to just say, the Republicans, not actually warmongers, just some guys doing the best they could with the information at hand?
I think so, because it's like people are fundamentally dumb and they only know what you tell them. And so if he just says, and especially we've talked about this before, the Republicans, the one of the things that is so great about the Republicans in terms of their strategy, but that angers people such as yourself, is the Republicans, it's like they are just memeologists like nobody's business. Like the thing about Obamacare, like nobody could, I don't think even I right now could come up with a sort of derisive, snarky name that's been given to a Republican plan by the Democrats. I mean, the only thing I can come up with is a contract with America, and that was the Republicans' own thing.
Yeah.
Democrats are terrible at sort of, you know, they're terrible at coming up with little viral sayings and slogans and talking points like that. Republicans are exceptionally skilled at it. So I think it's one of those things that if you just say it and then you say it enough, it just becomes a thing that people believe.
Well, that and the fact that the Republicans figured out at some point that they can just lie.
Yeah.
And it's okay. They just say anything they want to say and anything they want people to believe. And even if they're called on it later, even if somebody says, no, we actually have videotape of you saying the exact opposite 6 months ago. No, I never said that. That didn't happen.
And the other thing is it's like the Republicans, they just get down in the dirt. They just go for it. When they lie full on. They look you in the eye. They don't blink. They shake your hand firmly. They're clutching a Bible and a baby and a pie and some fireworks and a copy of the Constitution and the body of Francis Scott Key.
And they know
and
that
later they're going to make a bonfire out of all of them.
Right. But
and they know that if they later say, I never said that. That never happened. They're, you know, the Republican constituency are going to go, well, OK, I guess he never said it. He's saying he didn't say it.
And then
didn't say it.
When you see the Democrats lying, though, they're just so unconvincing. That's the thing. Yeah. It's like the Democrats, you can tell that they have this sort of like weird moral prevarication. They're like you can just sense the inner waffle happening. And that's why they're just just speaking in terms of pure political strategy. That's why the Democrats never, ever succeed, because they can't lie convincingly. And one must be able to do that, I think.
Well, speaking of lies, Rumsfeld said he's deeply worried about the budget, and he supports the discourse that the Tea Party has brought to the budget debate.
Is he living on cat food at this point?
Yes.
Which is what you say when you have a book to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the deficit is a danger to our country. I think it's going to damage our future. And I think it's putting our next generation at great risk. And we have to really be honest enough with ourselves and address it. And I think that the Tea Party people are energized by that concern.
Would that be the deficit we mostly have because of the war that they could have avoided if they hadn't gotten the bad information about the WMDs?
Oh, that's just nitpicking, Don.
That was just a long clip to say, buy my book.
Seriously. I mean, I can admire that. I can also admire the fact that, like, here's the thing. Like, you got two different reasons for doing this. Like, you got Rumsfeld who's up pipping this book of his, which is called? Anyone?
Rumsfeld?
I just heard
Rumsfeld,
somebody just...
Rumsfeld, The Final Frontier.
It's like the loudest swallow ever. Who was that just
was
now? No, his book, it's actually pretty great because it's one of Donald Rumsfeld's lasting contributions to popular culture. His book is called Known Unknowns. And that's one of those phrases, like, what a massively useful phrase that is. And what did I ever do without that? How do we describe things before Donald Rumsfeld gave that insane, like, weird, like, Stockdalian press conference where he was like, well, there are known knowns and unknowns. And at the time, it seemed sort of like gibberish. But then by the end of it, you went, my God, it's brilliant. So he's out pushing the book. And so I can admire him, you know, just getting on camera and just saying whatever garbage comes into his head just to get people to buy his book. Then there's the other guy, like Cheney, who seems to be popping up like all the time. I don't think there's been a week that's gone by, even when his heart was having – they were just taking it out and replacing it with, you know, baboon bits or whatever it is they were fixing him with. It was like he couldn't stay off camera. But that was for no reason except to just continue to put the boot in on the Obama administration. You know what I mean? It was like he just – it was like a retired player just running out of the bleachers just to go down and just kick a guy in the shins. He just can't help himself.
And he still is because he – says that he's a little peeved about the Nobel Peace Prize going to Obama in 2009.
I think that the deficit is a danger to our country. I think it's going to damage our future. And I think it's putting our next generation at great risk.
Is it Rumsfeld 3?
Yeah, you want Rumsfeld 3.
He had not accomplished a thing when he got the Nobel Prize. It was given to him on hope. Had to have been, because there wasn't anything that he'd done. He'd been in office 15 minutes.
Well, he is right about that.
Oh, no. But again, I don't care.
And another thing, that Obama.
They gave the Nobel Peace Prize to Yasser Arafat. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it ought to just come with a sort of rim shot at this point. I mean, really, who cares? Somebody says, some guy somewhere says, some punditizer says, Don and Rick, you're both nuts, he says. Both parties are lying. The Democrats are equally evil. I don't have any I don't dispute that. I'm just the Democrats, as Jello Biafra once said, the Democrats are on the inside where the Republicans are on the outside.
Yeah, really, Rick was just saying that they just don't lie as good.
That's
as the
thing.
Republicans.
Like, if you just assume
just
it was in a lot of ways a compliment.
No, I'm just saying that it's like, you know, we were talking about the Grammys last week, and I said that if one just assumes that all of the albums that are nominated for Album of the Year, if one assumes that because music is so subjective, they are all equally good artistically, just because you can't really – there's no score for that. Then if you assume that all the records are good artistically, then you have to sort of, in my opinion, make the decision based upon which album has the larger societal and cultural impact. So it is with politics. If you just assume they're all evil, then really you're just grading on points for style. I mean, it just becomes sort of a, you know, where you're just holding up like the 9.5 for how convincingly they look at the camera and just peddle you like the hugest load you've ever heard. So anyway, so there's that. But I tell you what, right, but here's the thing. Like right now, I'm telling you, if we had to hire some spokesperson or had to hire some mouthpiece to go out there and just flack for us, and Donald Rumsfeld was available and we could pay that, do you not think we'd have that guy in staff right now if we could afford it? I mean,
that's because the Grammys might be the Grammys, but politics is basically the equivalent of the slam dunk contest, which I caught a little bit of in a bar the other night before I went to the December show. And what a pile of crap that thing has become! They were like hanging a stuffed animal from the rim, and then somebody was going to dunk and take the stuffed animal off and dunk the stuffed animal, and then somebody jumped over the hood of a car to dunk, and it was. Politics is like that.
When did this the slam dunk thing? Because I haven't even thought about for quite some time. When did that take place?
Saturday night. At least that's when it was on in the bar before I went to go see the Decemberists.
Because on Friday afternoon, I went to Spirit of 77, which I kept calling Spirit of 76 because I have like the sports knowledge I have could fit inside like a flea's navel. So I went to Spirit of 77, which is the bar where the sports bar where Greg and Sarah were doing the first installment of their Trailblazers show. They're doing a show on Trailblazers.tv, which was fantastic, by the way, which was really, I swear to God, and I wouldn't just say this, it actually was laugh out loud funny. I did lol several times and with gusto during the broadcast. But like they kept being distracted by the fact that, so they're in a sports bar, so there's like TVs everywhere, including this TV that's like the size of a movie screen. I mean, big screen TVs in sports bars have gotten so much bigger since the last time I was at a sports bar. No lie, it was like the size of a movie screen. It was unreal. real. But like Justin Bieber was at some sports, he was at some basketball game doing something or other.
So I think it was the celebrity game.
Yeah, they kept like being distracted by like the huge towering visage of Justin Bieber sort of like looming over everybody. It was sort of very weird.
He won MVP.
Really?
Yes. Like one of 11 shooting. David Stern, who's like the NBA's Donald Rumsfeld, was just said, interesting MVP.
Let me ask you this: Who picks the head of the commissioner of the NBA? Because I know that Stern seems to be one of those guys that is disliked by everyone and respected by no one, and yet he just has the gig and apparently is just there forever.
I believe the commissioners serve at the behest and payment of the owners.
Really? Is that a thing where the owners get together and they vote?
Well, he's got a contract. So.
Okay, but I mean, when the contract's up, they could either extend or they could replace him. He just seems to be. He just seems to be one of those guys that just Like they just anointed him. They just burned some. They burned some papyrus or something, and the smoke came out. And it's David Stern, and he's just there like forever. So all right, here is Don Taylor.
Let's do a Geek Watch.
Let's, because we haven't really done that. That ship hasn't already sailed.
That wasn't the break.
No.
This high speed modem is entirely.
The whole show is a Geek Watch.
That ship hasn't made the Kessel Run.
It's just a television show.
See what I did there?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But
standing right here.
We were wondering if quantum flux. And I just listened on
there. There is no quantum flux.
That was hella
no
funny.
It was.
No goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here's Don Taylor.
Blogs are now being abandoned by young people in favor of Facebook and Twitter, according to the New York Times.
Really?
Who, of course, would know all about it.
Is that from the same study that a few years ago said that young people were experiencing iPod fatigue?
Probably.
Yeah.
A Pew poll found that from 2006 to 2009, use of blogs by 12 to 17-year-olds declined by half to 14% of all kids on the web, with the unsettling implication that at one point, more than one quarter of all teenagers had blogs. 20-somethings were also moving away from the medium, citing a lack of readership, a lack of time, or simply a preference for Facebook as a forum for day-to-day inanities. Both Blogger and LiveJournal have posted declines in unique visitors. A LiveJournal spokeswoman offered an assessment of the nature of the pursuit. She said, "Blogging can be a very lonely occupation. You write out into the abyss."
Into the abyss.
Tumblr and WordPress, which is considered a place for serious bloggers, have been spared a decline. Older people seem to be hewing to their blogging habits, with 46 to 73-year-old bloggers on the rise.
This is a retarded story. I think I speak – yes, Ryan?
I hadn't read the story yet, but I'd had numerous people reference it and talk about it as if this was some really bad thing. This sounds like a wonderful thing. If kids are not like – feeling the need to let everybody know everything that they do all the time on blogs and or other things.
And it doesn't sound like they're not interested in it, but it sounds like they're just not writing
them.
They're
not writing
themselves.
It sounds like
they're not reading them.
Is it really surprising that teenagers would rather write like 140 characters several times a day than sit down and write a damn blog
post? Or go home and have an essay test.
And also the idea that this is somehow true. I mean, whether it's good or bad, the idea that it's true because they're not using LiveJournal as much. That's like saying that the internet is on its way out because Angel Fire pages aren't really racking up the hits.
Well, I only know, and this is of course purely anecdotal. You know, one thing does not make.
Is this about your grandfather who lived to be 98?
No, this is about me, who is 98.
All right.
I was on LiveJournal for 6 years, and I just dropped it entirely. And at the moment, all I've been doing for the last year has been posting to Twitter and to Facebook.
I think you are the only person I've known, like an actual real face-to-face life, who really used LiveJournal. I mean, I know a lot of people did, but I never knew any of those people. So I always wondered, LiveJournal always seemed like a place for like, LiveJournal seemed like where you went with your thoughts if you were really arty, and seemed like the kind who knew how to, like if you knew how to create like ASCII roses, you probably spent time on LiveJournal.
Well, LiveJournal was interesting, and I guess it is still interesting, it's still there, but LiveJournal.
To old people.
LiveJournal is interesting because not only do you blog, but you friend other people's blogs, and then you have a reading list kind of like you do on Facebook where, you know, you basically get other people's daily blog posts and you can read them every single day and comment on them. And you actually, you know, over the course of 6 years, actually, in the way that you get to know people on the internet, I actually got to know quite a lot of people. And a lot of those people are Facebook friends and people that we follow each other on Twitter now. But LiveJournal, and it was the same thing. I just really didn't have any interest at some point in just sitting down every day and writing like 1,000 words about what I've been doing with my meaningless existence.
Let's talk about something else here. Speaking of the evolution of the net and the youth, boy, you know, if you just want to see, if you want to, what is it? I think it was H.O. Mencken that said, he said something about, or it might have been David Selznick. He said, in my life, it is not enough that I succeed. It is a must that others fail. so really, if you want to just go over and smell the reek of putrefaction coming off something, spend some time at MySpace.
Oh, yeah.
It's so deeply satisfying in a horrible, horrible way. I mean, it's just, it is... Here's the thing, and it's like, you know, the laptop I have is a couple years old. I think I got this at the beginning of 2009, so my laptop's like 2 years old or whatever. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's not like I'm going there like an Amiga or something. I go to MySpace, and it's like MySpace's sole function now seems to be to lock up your computer so it can't do anything. You go there, and it just goes, and it freezes. I mean, it's just, and it's like you get the spinning ball, and then I have to do a hard restart or whatever. I have to crash the browser and everything. I remember, this was back when I was talking to... Our friends at Alpha Broadcasting, after they had done the big firing, one of the big firings at KUFO, I was going to say the last big firing at KUFO, but that statement's now inaccurate.
Not after this morning.
So when they were doing one of their many, many firings as part of being an upstanding member of the broadcasting community, they then brought me back in for some meetings, I don't know, a couple months after that, because they were interested in having me talk to the kids on LiveJournal and elsewhere and doing sort of an internet broadcast thing and whatever, which I ended up not doing for a lot of reasons. But I remember sitting in these meetings, and this would have been, goddamn, when would this have been? I guess it would have been like January 2010, maybe. But I remember just sitting in these meetings and just listening to these guys talk to me about like how they wanted to like synergize networking opportunities and, you know, but it's just a whole bunch of crap. They didn't seem like bad guys as such. They just, not unlike the idea of using Wonder Woman to sell MAC cosmetics, it just seemed a little misguided and probably not going to succeed. But one of the things they kept talking about was how like this big like rebranding and revamping of MySpace that was on the way, and they kept saying to me like with a straight face, they kept going, no, and MySpace is about to be, it's going to get a facelift, and MySpace is going to be that Facebook, they just could not talk to me enough. I don't know what money changed hands where or whose palm was crossed with what silver, but they could not wait to tell me about how MySpace was going to be like key to their online broadcasting. And I actually kind of bought it after a while, because they were so persuasive. They seemed so convinced of it. And so then when the big revamp of MySpace happened like 6 months ago, like I have to say I was sort of surprised. Because not only had they sold it to me so hard as being this thing that was going to, you know, going to level the playing field once again, but it just seems like MySpace. What's like what you talked about when you saw the Green Hornet, and you were saying like, don't they bring people in, like normal, regular people in to look at these movies and say like, this is terrible. Like, here's the things you got to fix. It's astounding that MySpace didn't bring in like actual normal everyday internet users and say like, look at this. Like, tell us everything that's wrong about it. Because it's worse than it was before, which didn't seem possible.
Well, I told you, I got an email last week where it was saying, hey, we noticed you haven't updated your MySpace account in a while. And I was like,
you think?
Really? The MySpace thing that I made like 4 years ago and then immediately went, wow, this thing is crap. Yeah. I don't want to do this anymore, and never used it ever. Yeah, you're right. I haven't updated that lately.
It really is.
Thanks for noticing 4 years later, MySpace.
Yeah, it's astoundingly bad.
By the way, I did like this one quote here from the New York Times story on this. That yes, 46 to 73-year-old bloggers are on the rise. The New York Times observed that perhaps it's the older generation's desire for a deeper discussion, quote, to share dieting stories, rant about politics, and celebrate their love of cats.
Here's the thing. I can't tell if they're trying to be snarky there or not.
I think they're trying to be a little snarky.
Or if they actually have a pie chart somewhere, you know? Like if some like sort of, you know, Mark Andreessen guy is like in the room going, and what you see here is you see what you call your cat event horizon. 39% of old people, they love cats, they love the internet, the magical confluence of the two. Gentlemen, that's where the money is.
Got a Venn diagram of people over 46 who blog, people over 46 who love cats. The overlap is huge.
God damn.
This is the problem with attempting humor in traditionally humorless mediums such as newspapers.
And also,
you never know.
That's what I was going to. And also, just with I mean, let's be honest. It's I'm not trying to pick on newspapers. I really not, because it just seems
okay.
No, I mean, and I'm not
they,
saying
they don't really need you kicking them right now.
And I'm not saying that because you're here. I'm just saying it's because to pick on newspapers assumes that everybody, you know, that newspapers are, you know, picking on newspapers to me is sort of like people who pick on physical books because there's e-books and there's the Kindle or whatever. And it's like anything else. They'll figure out how to make it work or they won't, just like broadcast radio, just like everything. But it does seem like there's like this almost like this willful desire to pick exactly the wrong solution for all of these problems and just to have no actual day-to-day like boots-on-the-ground understanding of how things work. So it's hard to tell in terms of this whether they're actually trying to be funny or whether they just have so completely and totally missed the point of how – I mean, I don't know. So, well, whatever.
That sounded like attempted humor.
Probably.
I think so.
Was that the Geek Watch?
That was it.
Then before we close it, I should just say this. I got this from our friend Seamus. Subject line of this email, Nathan Fillion is even more awesome than before. Rick, I know it's hard to believe he could actually be more awesome than he already was. But Fillion has apparently stated in an interview and on his Twitter account that if he could raise the money to buy the rights to Firefly, he would do so and then start making it and releasing it on the internet. Then several other people who were directors and writers told him they'd drop everything and come work with him if that happened. On top of that, Sci-Fi is apparently now planning to run Firefly reruns. And on top of that, the Science Channel is going to be airing Firefly reruns with a commentary from, and this is a name that I probably should know and I don't, I believe it is Michio Kaku? Who I'm presuming is known, with commentary on the science within the series. Sort of like that that Jim Kakalios guy that does the physics of superheroes. He says, it sounds like Firefly is possibly about to experience a resurgence that could make Fillion's interest come true. How amazing would that be? And then he has a link to the interview. And then there is helpnathanbuyfirefly.com, which is awesome. and then, you know, and so there you go. So there's that. And it's like the thing about that is, I think in the wrong hands or in a different scenario, I think it might be tempting to look at that and just feel like it was a little sad. You know, like if, you know, like that's a thing, like if, I don't know, like if one of the guys from Pacific Blue or something was trying to do that, like you just sort of be like, oh, it's just, it's, why are you doing, why for you make us all cry?
David Hasselhoff, you already own Baywatch.
Yeah, but the thing is with this, it does seem like if any show was ever really going to become like, well, I mean, we've talked about with this show how it's become this almost sort of like a co-op sort of a thing where, you know, it is effectively listener owned, and that they are the ones who determine if it stays on the air. So the only one, you know, who should be able to cancel us is the audience. It does seem like if any show was going to be able to achieve that in a television sense, it would be Firefly. I mean, I'm not saying it'll work, but if any show was able to make that happen and become sort of like owned by a collective and yet also done professionally in terms of an ongoing venture, it seems like Firefly is that show. Like all of the planets are lined up. And plus, you know, you get the sense that even though Whedon has moved on, it's not like he's not like some guys where he moves on and then he just completely like forgets the old projects and just puts in the rearview mirror and just, you know, and they're, you know, well, that was then, I'm on to the other thing now. He has no compunction about going back and revisiting some of those things in a respectful and legitimate way like he did with Shepherd's Tale.
It's always interesting to me that in television there's this constant drive. I think part of the problem is that with network executives, they have to prove themselves in their job by bringing something new to the table and then making it a success, because it's that constant striving to find something brand new, but something brand new that, of course, works on the same old formulas that have already proven that they work before, because, of course, we are selling a product and we want to make sure that it doesn't fail. But again, it has to be brand new. And that it's so unusual. It's not. It's happened a couple of times, but it's so unusual for network executives to look at something and go, you know, there's already a built-in fan base for this. We don't have to market this. They would already buy it. They want to buy it. And you think that someone would look at that and go, you know, this is a slam dunk. This is a sure thing. And yet they don't, because everybody has to like carve out their own career niche as the guy who created X.
Well, that's like every time there's a new program director of radio station, and it probably is this way at other industries as well. But every time there's a new PD or a new GM, you just fear the worst, because it's like if the thing continues to make money, be successful, they don't get any credit for it. And so they just sweep everybody out and put in their new crap, whether or not it's a good idea, because that way, you know, the failure's on them, but I guess the success would be as well. We do have Seth MacFarlane to thank for a lot of this too, because I think because of the Family Guy thing, networks are more willing to look back and revisit something that has an established fan base that they got rid of that they could bring back. Yeah. And like I said, if any show is going to do it, it would be Firefly. So there you go. So that's help Nathan buy Firefly.com. That is the website there, which is awesome. So there you go. That's your Geek Watch.
By Grafthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Joining us today, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. What is going on in your world, sir?
I'm trying to start a movement. This started Saturday night.
Okay.
Portlanders against the calling out of Put a Bird on It.
From Portlandia.
That has become a problem, has it?
It has become a real problem.
In that people are going, hey, look, it's just like the thing on that show. There's a bird on this thing, honey.
That or, say, at the sold-out Decemberist show at the Schnitz on Saturday night, shouting out to the stage, Put a Bird on It.
No.
It was in 2006. Colin Malloy was doing an NPR interview, and somehow the topic of Freebird came up, and he pitched the idea of musicians against the calling out of Freebird. And earlier on this tour in Chicago one day on Twitter, he said, putting together the set list, any requests? And in like 5 minutes got all these Freebirds. So he reminded people of the musicians against the calling out of Freebird. And I really feel like we need this. And Ezra Kraft from the Mercury handled it like, you know, I wrote part of the review this morning was actually trying to enlist Colin's support for Portlanders against the calling out of Put a Bird on It. But Ezra from the Mercury handled it particularly well on Twitter on Saturday night, where he just wrote, to the people shouting, Put a Bird on It at the Decemberist show, die in a fire.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you on that.
And here's the thing. It was like when that initial Portlandia music video came out and everybody was putting it on Facebook and everybody was passing it around Twitter and everybody was going nuts about it, that was the only joke that I thought was funny. And then, like, whoever the first person was to reference it, that probably went over okay. It's so dead now. And really, I'm going to try and put a blog post up this afternoon that if you hear of instances of this, please email me, tell me who it is, and I will shame them publicly with whatever small amount of power that
you could actually
I might have.
You should just film yourself. You should just go to their home and just ridicule them, you know, and just lecture them, you know, face to face.
Well, now, you get people to actually give you the names of if they're at shows and their friend does it, get them to email you the name of the friend, and you could actually have
like
that as an addendum at the end of when you, you know, on your blog.
It could become Portland's Freebird, and we need to stop that. Now, I was done in a little bit this morning by, and I don't know who did it, and they meant well enough, but the jump head on the review said, Put a Bird on It jumps the shark, which is just using, you know.
That's kind of great, though, actually. That's sort of great. I mean, in sort of a weird, like, Mobius strip kind of a way.
I got an email from a gentleman about that, and I was like, I kind of got to agree with you on that one.
Here's the thing. It's like and Don knows about this. I have the thing about shouting Freebird. I swear to God, there is nothing makes me wish that I had the telepathic ability to kill like some jackass shouting Freebird. Because it's like...
Or in a Gata DeVita.
That can end friendships, I think. Like, if I was at a show and somebody I was there with, and I could have known them for a long, long time, if they shouted Freebird, I think that might end the friendship.
And you just turn and you say, like, who are you, this person that I thought was my... this creature that walks like a man.
Somebody shouted that at a Hayes Carl show one time at the Doug Fir, and he paused and he goes, I remember my first concert.
Yeah.
It was Poison and the Bullet Boys at the Houston County Fairgrounds.
I was at a Jonathan Colton show. I think it was at the White Eagle or something. And I was sitting one table over from, like, one of those woo guys.
Uh-huh.
And I don't understand how you could be friends with a woo guy and not tell him to stop being a woo guy. I ended up finally just leaning forward and yelling at the guy, stop going woo!
By the way, here's the thing. If I were to die tomorrow, if I were to be stricken by some dread disease, or if I were walking down the street and some sort of a Warner Brothersian safe were to fall out of the sky and crush me, I like to think that I have made your life a little bit better. Because just as before Rumsfeld, we didn't have the ability to say, like, known unknown, like you didn't have that phrase, that I have given you the phrase woo guy. Now, I'm not...
See, my first thought when I heard woo guy was the rug pisser.
I won't say that there was no one who used that phrase before I did, but to my knowledge, I was the first person to actually sort of quantify him as a species, the woo, you know, who just woos at everything. But it's like the Freebird thing. The thing about the guy yelling Freebird is that, like, at least the Woo guy, like, you can say that that is like a sort of – it's a sort of untamed kind of human exuberance that's coming out in like a verbally unformed, you know, like he's
– And one or two Woos in a show is fine. But when you go Woo, like, every 5 minutes
– Yeah.
Go Woo for no reason. Woo! Every 5 minutes. I honest to God, you just – someone's going to punch you in the head.
That angers me. The thing about the Freebird thing that makes it so much worse, though, is that, like – yelling Freebird is like a ninth generation borrowing of someone else's wit. Yeah. You know, it's, I would say, like bumper stickers, you know, like if you don't have your own wit or thoughts, pay $1.98 and get somebody else's wit to display on your automobile. And yelling Freebird is like that. It is, you know, it is the concert equivalent, but far, but it's been around far longer and is far more odious than the that's what she said thing.
Or, you know, if you go to sports, the get in the hole guy at golf tournaments.
Please,
you know,
do explain.
Guy tees off on a par five, you know, it's, you know, 600 yards to the hole and get in the hole.
And yeah. Just, you know.
Or you demand. Golf has a lot of, golf is full of idiots now that I think about it.
Golfing is for a-holes. So saith Ryan White. God damn. Seriously, there's just the moments like that that I am glad that I don't have that with it, that acracadabra curse or whatever the hell it is in Harry Potter, because I'd use it. It's like the same reason I own a gun. I'd use it. I'd use it constantly. I'd use it every day until they took me down. So I have no illusions about that. All right, so you are now. Have you written about this, or are you going to be writing about this?
Yeah, no, that was part of the Decemberist review this morning. I might give it a separate
show.
Oh, it was great.
It was fantastic.
It was great. You know, I wrote this on Twitter immediately afterwards, and it was in the review this morning, too. For all the words that are spent writing about this band, oftentimes, you know, digging into, you know, what bit of folklore or where Colin Molloy is pulling those things from. I don't think there's enough words written about how exceptional they are live and how good of, like, he has all of the tools for a really entertaining frontman. I mean, he's funny.
He's got
you know, great stage presence, and that band is so good that they can just do anything that the songs, you know, need to be done. They managed to launch a sing along on of a Doobie Brothers tune, which he was the, you know, cracking on as the entire audience was, you know, saying, "I'm gonna need some funky dicks," and then take that right into 16 Military Wives.
That's awesome. Bands who can, you know, there's that thing that they say about bands being tight but loose, you know, that they gel really well together, but that they can improv's the wrong word for it, but that the shows have an ebb and a flow to them where that isn't choreographed, and where they can follow. I mean, this all sounds so like such hippie fairy nonsense, but you know, they can follow the energy of the room and the energy of the crowd, because that's different from night to night and show to show because of a billion different things. And bands who can not only flow with that and do what the room and the night and the crowd call for, but who can do it as a unit. It's one thing if you're a solo guy up there.
Right.
You know, that's just you. But it's like, you know, a band of like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys. I mean, that becomes exponentially more difficult. And I admire anybody who can do that.
And it was, you know, I mean, it was their first show since, you know, they had a number one record back here in town. And it was the end of the first leg of the tour. So they had like 2 weeks off. So it was really loose. And you could tell that they knew probably half the people in there to begin with, and it was so it was loose when it needed to be loose, and when they needed to focus in on something like the Rake song or something like that, they just killed it. They're, you know, they can be heavy, they can play the ballad, they can play the rock song, they can do the goofy cover. It's a really good rock band.
I've mentioned this before that I have never seen the Decemberist live because it just didn't strike me as being my thing until this record. And but the exception to that was I saw Molloy do an in-store at Jackpot a few years back, and it was just him and a guitar and whatever. And I actually was surprised because his music is so, I don't want to say it's dour, but it's, you don't really hear the music and just go, "What a jokester that guy must be."
Because you get the idea of like a bookworm behind it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, an English major who read, you know, books that even other English majors didn't read.
But I was impressed and really surprised by how funny and personable he was.
Yeah.
So here's my big dorky question is, having listened to this the new record, King is Dead, a lot and really, really, I mean, really just loving it. I mean, it is a fantastic record. What if I'm working backward from this through their catalog, what is the if I'm sort of retrograding or whatever that word is, what is the record I should go to from this?
I would either go to The Crane's Wife or quite possibly Her Majesty the Decemberists.
Okay. Because it's what I'm hoping is that this can sort of be the portal that I use to get into more of their stuff, that I can sort of get into it by degrees at this point, because it is such a great record, and it's as you said earlier, it's a band that people have wanted to like in some cases but haven't really been able to. So Social Distortion, that already happened?
Yes, it was a couple of weeks ago.
And how was that?
It was very good. It was
you hadn't seen them before.
I hadn't seen them before. It was strange in that they seemed, you know, and Ness especially, really energized by the new material.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't play much of it.
Interesting.
So they brought out two background singers and did two of the big numbers off of the new record to start the encore. Annette fed the rest of the encore, which was great. But he really seemed kind of bored by some of the older stuff.
Well, you know, but it's one of those things where it's like, I think it was Elton John was talking about this, and he said that your career is like a river, and he said, but it's like this river that sort of turns into concrete as you go through it, you know, behind you, and the more hits you have, you know, the faster and, you know, and more imprisoning that becomes. And it's like, you know, you see bands that have been around for 20, 30, and 40 years, and with every hit or every album they have, and I, you know, it's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem, the number of things that you must play increases, and the number of songs that people will not let you out of there until they hear it gets longer and longer and longer.
Well, it's like, you know, I remember going to see Toby Keith a few years ago at the Rose Garden. He's got something like 25, 26 country number ones now. So, if he's blocking out a 2-hour show, he's got like two spaces for something other than these hits that everybody who's coming to the Rose Garden is expecting to see. And that's, you know, that's why I come back to an old familiar. That's why I really appreciate somebody like Springsteen, who doesn't feel the need to play Born in the USA every night or Thunder Road every night. He'll play Born to Run every night.
Right. Is there are there songs that Springsteen does play every single? Is there a song he's played at every show?
Well, no, not if you count like when he did the Devils in Dust tour, I think maybe once he did like Thunder Road or Born to Run. He stayed away from that stuff on that tour. But I think pretty much every E Street show now has Born to Run in it. But I think that's the only one that's definitely there.
That's one of those things where there's that contract.
The Promised Land is probably in there too.
There's like a contract. There's an understanding between a guy like Springsteen and his audience that, like, you know, you're not going to get the same thing every night, but, like, it'll be worth your while. I'm going to make it worth your while. And, you know, and the problem with a band like Social Distortion is that other than Ball and Chain, they don't really have a definitive hit single. So as a result, everybody in the crowd has the song that they feel is the definitive single. So Ness is then locked into playing these same 14 songs or whatever every night with a couple of the new ones. It's strange because it's interesting that you said that you talked about the new material. I've been listening to that new record, Hard Times and Nursery Rhymes, which is wonderful, and I love Social Distortion, and I am second to no one. I mean, I, you know, like all of us, you know, here, like the all three of us, certainly. I mean, I grew up, you know, as a dirtbag rock fan, and into the whole beautiful tragedy of because there is this sort of horrible, glorious poetry of you know, being a burnout and of the addiction and, you know, an implosion, and there's that sort of Chelsea Hotel magic that I think, especially when you are young, that it is, you know, that you've that I think looms a lot larger as being beautiful in your imagination maybe than it does when you're older. I don't know, but that being said. You know, you listen to the new record from Social Distortion, and the one thing I would say is he does sound, and I don't know, but he does sound like a guy who finally has kind of beaten all of his demons back, and not in a boring way. Sometimes bands, guys who survive and make it out the other side, their music suddenly sucks. And very rarely do you hear somebody where they really sound re-energized, and he really does on this record.
Yeah, you know, the new stuff was really, really good. And it's not that the old stuff was bad or that it was a bad show. It was a really fun show. But you could just tell that they were so much more into that new stuff. And especially the encore, it fueled that. So that by the time they got to, you know, I think they closed with Ring of Fire. And, like, there was one of those, like, great crystal ballroom moments. I've never felt the floor bounce the way that it bounced at one point during that, where everybody was just hitting it.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We should take a moment to do this. Hold on. Where's the button? Wait.
We should take a moment to do something.
There we go. There's the button I was looking for. Hey, let me ask you this. You know anything about refrigerators?
I know they keep my beer cold.
I mean, I figured that because you know sports, you might know how to fix home appliances.
Not refrigerators.
Okay.
But it hasn't broken yet, so perhaps I could.
See, here's the thing. Let me ask you this.
I feel like I would die of Freon inhalation or something. Do they still have Freon in them?
Okay, I was just going to ask you if they still had Freon because I don't know. I have no
idea.
Is
that a thing that still exists?
I have no idea. That could be like one of those things where it's like everything is transmitted through the ether, which doesn't exist and has never really. The Freon could be, Freon could be like asbestos for all I know. They could have taken it out 70 years ago. But so I had this fridge. It wasn't working. Stopped refrigerating and whatever. And so the landlord comes over, takes out the old fridge, brings me in a used but, a different fridge that he presumably got from a reputable dealer, puts it in. That was last week. And now, the new fridge, exactly the same symptomology. Things in the freezer get really cold. They don't actually freeze. Things in the refrigerator get kind of cool. Not actually refrigerated as such, though, in the conventional way. I have no idea if it's, like, Freon. I was asking Don, I'm like, could that be the power outlet? And it's like, then in the same breath, I realized that no one knows. No one in this room certainly knows. So I got nothing. So if you are... If you were anything like all of us, and I pray for you and yours that you were not, you might want to contact Squires Electric when such situations arise. That's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors. So, really, when you reach the end of your repair rope, which will probably happen sooner rather than later, you want to contact Squires Electric because they know the answers to all of these things. They're going to be able to come out, they're going to take a look at it, they're going to be able to get you an estimate up front so you know what it's going to cost you, and be able to just get it fixed. Because really, especially with something like your refrigerator, or like Seamus when they had that, it's like 20 below or something in Denver, and he didn't have any heat because he pulled all the wiring out thinking that he had a little while before the cold snap was going to happen in Denver. And he's like, I just want it to work. And so finally he ends up calling the guy. He does exactly what I'm sure the electrical folk are happy about, but what you don't want to do. He ends up calling the guy at like midnight or something, when it's 20 degrees out in Denver, 20 below, and everybody is calling the electrical guy. And he ends up paying, some massive amount of money. But the guy comes out to the house, and the guy's like, okay, what's wrong with your heater? And Seamus is just like, it doesn't work. It's 38 degrees. Just fix it. I don't care. Just make it work.
He's just pulling giant handfuls of dollar bills out of his pockets and throwing them at the guy's feet.
Right. Just please, for the love of God. So you just want it to work, but you don't want to wait until it's an emergency. So write down this number. It's 503-252-1609, or you can go to their website. It's squireselectric.com. Bookmark it and make sure that you got it handy, because the first sign of trouble, you want to have them come out and fix the thing. Just make sure that it operates as it should. Longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, going on 13 years now, so extended members of the family, and they are a proud sponsor of this very fine broadcast. Squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. At the news desk, it is once again Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Bam!
A day at the Old Ford Fire Department Rodeo in Williamson, North Carolina.
Wait, ended in tragedy.
Well, it turned scary.
Oh, okay.
A bull jumped into the audience during a show and injured a couple. According to an eyewitness, rodeo officials were trying to round up the bull after a rider fell off when the bull charged right into the audience. A picture taken by a viewer shows the bull just before it charged the couple in front of it. Also, if you go online, if you look up Williamson, North Carolina, bull rodeo, there is a video online of the bull charging into the crowd. Two people were injured. The man tried to knock his wife out of the way, but she ended up being injured
anyway. Does the bull look angry, do you suppose?
Oh, yeah. The bull is peeved.
Does it look like, I've had enough of this ring around my testicles?
Have you ever seen a kind one?
No, I haven't, actually.
They all look angry.
Yeah. I guess that's really the downside of deciding that the rodeo, by necessity, needs to have something that's angry and not likely to be corralled easily.
Yeah. The bull jumped 6 to 8 feet into the stands.
Well done.
A woman who was at the rodeo with her family and sitting right next to the couple who were charged was videotaping it and said, he's getting closer and closer, and then you hear the girls scream, and that's when he came sailing just right over the railing. I've never seen an animal jump that high.
You don't really think of a bull having a good vertical that, and yet this is like when, because Lara's gone to Spain a few times, and she keeps, kind of... I won't say nagging. She keeps asking in ever more strident tones if I will accompany her to Spain. And you know what might actually get me there is the fact that there's that museum of ham. And
well, so yeah.
That what did we decide it was? It was something actually really simple. It was like Museum de Hamo,
yeah,
or something.
Museo de Hambon.
And so Hamon. She asked if I would ever go to Spain, and I told her that I would go to Spain if we could attend the bullfight, and only on a day when we were certain to see a goring of some kind.
Also, if you go to Madrid, they have some amazing, like crazy architecture in Madrid. The kind of architecture that is just jaw-dropping and bizarre and unlike anything you will see anywhere.
No lie, the thing that might actually get me to go to Madrid is that the Salvador Dali Museum.
That too.
Which she went to, and she was just, you know, came back with, you know, just like endless photos.
Just going to Madrid isn't enough of a reason to get you to go to Madrid? I hear really great things about Madrid.
Yeah. I hear great things about my couch. And the thing is, I've experienced those things.
Ham will get him
you know,
to Spain.
But it's like, at the same time, the Museum of Ham does sound, but I also got like a Safeway, you know, like a block from where I live. And so
there's a Whole Foods like right up, a New Seasons right up the street here, and they have like probably 14 different kinds of fancy ham.
The problem with being me, I suppose, the problem with being someone around me is that I am like, people always say low maintenance like it's a good thing. But that's until you are married to some jackass like myself and you realize that I am like so aggressively low maintenance that it's impossible to get me to leave the house because there's like nothing interesting. There's like I am in no way do I feel compelled to ever go anywhere or do anything. You know, do you want to go to some exotic country? No, I'm fine. You know, and just sitting at home, like staring at a wall, picking my toes. You know,
I was very proud of myself when I came in this morning, by the way, because I was like, because most Mondays you're like, what'd you do this weekend? And I'm like, nothing. Wrote stuff on the computer and slept. And this weekend, I was very excited. I was like, I did all kinds of things this weekend. And then when I started telling you about all the things I did this weekend, I realized it involved having lunch with somebody, watching a movie, watching the entire first season of Breaking Bad, and putting a couple of coats of finish on my ukulele.
Woo!
And I realized that's not a terribly exciting weekend.
Life of Kings.
But for me, man, that was hectic.
Don't forget, so tomorrow, we shouldn't start on it today, but tomorrow we should talk about Breaking Bad because I'm going to start watching Fringe too. And also I did me some of that there watching of stuff over the weekend too. So we'll talk about that tomorrow because then we'll have our house.
Yes.
Is there a goddamn house tonight?
I don't know.
Probably.
Maybe.
All right. Okay, you got to remember to watch it because you forgot to watch Justified last week.
I will watch it.
All right. So
I'm all cut up on Justified, and I'll be watching House. And
Don't forget to also tomorrow we're going to be talking to Mr. Seth Aaron, winner of Project Runway Season 7. He'll be in the studio doing his top five tomorrow. So, all right.
We have a hick watch.
Do we? Yes. All right. The rodeo wasn't it just
now?
No,
it really wasn't. This is even hickier.
All right, hold on a second. It's impressive that a bull is able to leap into the stands like that. I mean, there's a railing and everything.
Well, if you ever see those the video from bullfights of when the bull has just finally had enough, they can when they get angry enough.
I love it when nature's mad enough. Yeah, and plus you got to figure the bull knows like, look, it's make or break time.
They had to put the bull in the slam dunk contest next year.
Who does the slam dunk? Who are these people in the slam dunk contest that are jumping off of cars?
NBA players.
Oh, all right.
Guys who are all,
Let's see. Here's your hick watch for
things.
Is this a slam dunk contest? But then there's also like some civilian, and he wins $1 million or something if he does it.
Is this for charity at all, or are they just potentially?
I don't think
so they're just showing off and could potentially damage themselves, which would harm their careers.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound very smart at all.
Also, if it's just guys who do that normally.
Yeah.
That'd be me being in some sort of a thing where I just talk. I mean, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
The half court free throw thing is at least interesting because then it's just some guy who could win like $1 jillion or whatever.
Well, it was the problem that we were having as we were discussing it the other night that Blake Griffin from the LA Clippers can't do anything more impressive when nobody's guarding him than he does on a nightly basis when he does these really impressive things in actual competition.
Yeah, it seems like the potential for thrills there is maybe minute.
So he jumped over a Kia. Big deal.
Here's Don Taylor.
So here's the Hick Watch. Two West Virginia cousins have been jailed after Pennsylvania State Police say they were stopped with a carload of stolen beef jerky and tools that the men were selling for gas money.
Awesome.
Michael Graham, 37, and John Barry, 35, both of Milton, West Virginia, were pulled over in Somerset Wednesday evening because the license plate was dangling from their car. Police say in an affidavit...
They've got tools! They've got tools in the car!
They could have used the jerky to stick it on.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Police say in an affidavit they saw, quote, a large amount of boxed and packaged beef jerky, unquote, and socket sets on the car's rear seat. Police say the cousins acknowledged stealing the items from auto parts stores and gas stations and were trying to sell the items for gas money to get back home to West Virginia.
With the jerky. Wait, no. But they were hold on. They were trying to sell the tools to get back home with the jerky, or they were selling all of it to get back home, like, in period.
I believe they intended to sell the beef jerky and the tools
to their old Kentucky home.
To someone.
Okay. So did they steal the tools and the jerky from the same place?
Well, it said auto parts stores and gas stations. So apparently,
how much jerky does your average gas station have, even in West Virginia?
Well, it says a carload of stolen beef jerky. So if they stop, that's a lot. If they're driving from West Virginia to Pennsylvania, which are, of course, you know, right next door to each other. But they're driving around. I mean, you hit like 10 stores.
Oh, it wasn't all one store then, maybe. They were doing like a series of stores.
It was a crime spree.
They somehow realized, I guess, the easiest thing to steal from an auto parts store are tools, are socket sets. And the easiest thing to steal from gas stations are jerky.
Well, you got to give them credit for being right about that, apparently.
I wonder how much reconnaissance they had to do on those auto parts stores.
No. They sensed it. That was a Spidey sense sort of a thing. No. Zeke, it's the beef jerky. I mean, it's because apparently they were right. I mean, if it hadn't been for the license plate, they would have gotten away with it. So they were apparently correct in their deductions about what you can steal and how easily. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's like, because you go to a lot of those like convenience stores like on the boondock, and it's like, they have like the little like ratchet and tool set like in the front by those little like rose things you smoke crack out of, and it's like, you know, they just figure you go in, grab it, and head to the head to the whatever. But that also assumes that none of these places had, like, nobody saw them at any point, and none of them had cameras unless they were still like smashing grabs at night or something, which seems unlikely. Because wouldn't somebody go like, "Hey, you get crap," and then like have picked up the phone and called? Because the cops obviously weren't looking for them.
Do you both go in when you're stealing beef jerky and socket sets, or do you leave a getaway driver?
I don't know. One guy's got to be there revving the engine so you can lam it.
I think one guy is the distraction. You go up to the counter, the auto parts store, and ask the guy some convoluted question.
They've tainted your lexicon.
While the other guy is going and he's pocketing the socket sets, sticking them in his jacket. Same thing. Then maybe they swap out at the gas station.
So one
the other guy, the socket set guy, goes and talks to the clerk while the other guy is the jerky thief.
So one asks some bubblegum questions, and while he's focused on the hubba bubba.
Sir, what is the difference between these two small scented trees? And then, you know, meanwhile, your friend, your brothers, you know, just, was it their brothers or cousins?
Cousins.
Okay. Wow.
But
don't you just want to know? I mean, don't you want to know if there was like a jump cut to the family at home to know if there was a family just sitting there waiting on that beef jerky and socket set or whatever or the money was going to bring and just watching the news and going, oh, tarnation. Now I'm going to have to get me one of them jobs.
I'm just imagining them having to go home, getting bailed out and then having to go home later. And their mom is like Mags Bennett, you know, and justify and just like, what the hell were you thinking?
What did I tell you?
About stealing jerky.
Sort of like it's like the dad in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You idiot, you ruined everything. That's awesome. All right, there's your so often it's like you have the Hick Watch and then, you know, it's good. But not a home run. This really is like, this is 100%. Well, they really brought, no, it's not even you. I mean, I'm just saying, you do what you can with the material you find. But it's like, you've got to have the clay to sculpt. And they really,
We got West Virginia. We got cousins. We got guys stealing jerky. And we guys getting caught because the license plate
was
dangling.
Last name?
Not that interesting. One guy's name is Graham and the other guy's name is Barry.
All right. So, well, the cousins really did bring it. So well done. Duke. There you go. Awesome.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
Awesome. Before we do anything else, we should do this. All right. I've actually minimized the been distracted by a thing. All right. Weren't you distracted by a thing earlier, Don?
I was. There was a thing that was distracting me.
All right. All right. Let's see here. Last week's winner for Name That Snack was a fine name, Emerson Stevens. Emerson Stevens.
Emerson
was the winner last week. And last week's snack was, Don?
I'm trying to remember what it was.
Remember the final clue on Friday? It was musical.
That wasn't the Ding Dongs. Those were the week before.
No,
right?
That was the week before.
Cracker Jack.
Cracker Jack.
Right.
Last week's snack was Cracker Jack, and so Emerson Stevens is the triumphant winner. So congratulations to you. You have brought glory on your house for all time, sir. Or madam, as the case may be. So you will win glory and esteem and fine heaping helpings of stuff.
Yeah, a big honking bag of snacks.
Is there any jerky in that?
I don't know. There's only one way to find out.
Sack of nuts.
Well, here's the thing.
You know, we have at least one bag there that no one has come and picked up.
Well, see, that's
is that your fault? Because you were supposed.
It is my fault.
You swore last week.
I was going to say when Ryan said, "Is there any jerky?" I was going to say, "Well, there's rummaging because there's the one that hasn't been, but really it is spoken for. I just haven't. I haven't mailed it yet.
Would you like me to bring a flat rate priority mail box in to put it in?
Because now, is that going to be large enough to... do they have flat rate boxes big enough for that?
I have like four different sizes of flat rate priority boxes at my house.
The answer to that is yes.
Okay, I will bring one in.
Could you bring two of those?
I can bring several.
That'd be awesome.
I have a whole mess of them from when I was shipping chocolates.
That's great. Thank you, Don Taylor.
You're welcome.
So last week's winner, Emerson Stevens. So congratulations. We will get to clue number one from this week here in just a moment. Don't forget, you must wait until Friday till clue number five is given out. Once clue number five is given out this coming Friday, if you were the first person to correctly identify the snack via snack at rickemerson.com, you're going to win yourself a fine a gift bag from EH Vending. EHVending.com is their website. That's EHVending.com. Or you can go to their website, EHVending.com, or you can call them at 360-816-1853. That's 360-816-1853. You can also contact James in Portland at 503-897-8204. Let's quickly go around the room here. At the last place of employment where you had a vending machine, what was the most coveted or prized item in your possession? What was the go-to item there, the item you most loved in the vending machine? Don Taylor.
Probably peanut M&Ms.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm very fond of the peanut M&Ms.
Now, have I ever brought in, actually, if I just mentioned this, have I ever brought in the pretzel M&Ms?
No, you have not. I have never had the pretzel M&Ms.
You brought in the cherry cordial M&Ms, and I think I brought in the coconut M&Ms, which are terrible.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I brought in the peanut butter Snickers, the Hershey's Drops.
I brought you the dark chocolate Kit Kat.
Yeah. Okay, the pretzel M&Ms, and they make almond M&Ms as well, by the way.
I've had those. They are good. They're kind of... They're weird. It's like a Jordan almond only with some chocolate added to it, so it just messes with my head too much.
How do you feel about the peanut butter M&Ms?
They're okay. They're all right. They don't really do that much for me.
The peanut M&M is still...
I like the texture of the peanut M&M. All right. Although, I always feel like I'm getting more of a bargain with the plain M&Ms, even though the packages weigh the same amount, because
unit is greater.
You have more M's.
Yeah, the actual unit count inside, it surpasses the peanut M&M by a factor of, 30% probably.
I know, when I worked at the Clackamas Review with Mike Russell, he had this thing for Skittles, and that was his.
Really?
Yeah. Every week when we got like our our day that we would have to like finish all our stories and lay out the paper.
Did he escape from a Norman Rockwell plate or something?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, every week when we had our layout day and we had to finish our stories and he was laying out the paper on Quark and he always had to have Skittles.
All right then. You know, he kind of looks like a Campbell's soup kid sometimes, too, when you look at him. You know?
He's very wholesome.
He is. He seems like his teeth ought to be gleaming and making that tinging noise.
His father is an FBI agent.
That explains a lot.
Who has this, like, sort of grizzled kind of Clint Eastwood-y kind of a thing going on. He's very imposing.
Does he have Mike's perfect hair?
Well, actually, Mike's adopted.
Okay, so
they have different hair, but yeah.
Because the thing about Mike's hair is, like, it's, Mike Russell's hair is really, I mean, he has the hair of 10 men.
He does.
Ryan White from the Oregonian, the most, now you have numerous vending machines there, I would imagine, probably one for each floor.
No, well, we got beverage vending machines up on the fourth floor, but the only food vending machines are down on the second floor.
Anna Griffin, since you got one of the, so you have a fancy kind of coffee dispensing machine now that it makes a variety of exotic drinks, is that true?
We do. I don't know that. It could be true. I certainly wouldn't doubt Anna. She's a far better reporter than I am.
Am I making that up, or did Anna Griffin say that they got a thing now that makes like a mocha?
Yeah, you can choose a mocha or a latte or something.
We might. I don't go down there very often.
It just sprays a bunch of crap into a cup, but I mean in different amounts and ratios than it did before. What is the most prized item in your assessment in the vending machines?
Well, since we don't stock Skittles anymore, probably the Starbursts.
Starburst? What is it with you people eating wax?
But I would really rather just walk down the street at the 7-Eleven and get some Sweet Tarts.
Now, see, but here's the thing.
Oh, Sweet Tarts.
If the vending machine were your own, if you ran the joint, or perhaps if you were able, let me just say this, I'm just saying, if you were able to put, you know, the decision maker there in touch with a company that were, that saved him some money, he might repay you by giving you one or two slots trays inside the vending machine where they would stock whatever Ryan White wanted. I'm just saying. Then it doesn't become what other people want. It becomes what Ryan White demands.
I don't want to. I don't want to kind of ruin any thoughts that you might have. But nobody listens to me about anything around there.
Okay. So. Well, we'll keep that a secret.
Even
between
vending
us.
Machines.
If you're a man who does have some smallish or largish amount of clout or influence,
or a lady,
or perhaps. Perhaps if you just, you know, if you're going to be issuing demands at some point in the future, you know, you might want to be stocking a vending machine with the appropriate snacks so that you can, you can have the proper energy and nutrients required to fully process those things. It's 503-897-8204, 360-816-1853, everything from regular soda and snack machines all the way to coffee services, etc. Here is clue number one for this week's Name That Snack contest, courtesy of EH Vending. Clue number one. Immigrant. I swear to God. Clue number one. Immigrant. I don't create the clues. I just read them. They're right there on the page. I just, here's the thing. It's sort of a Price Waterhouse thing where I don't create the clues because I read the clues, and it seems like that would be broaching that Chinese wall that Microsoft talks about, you know, between applications and an operating system. So I just, they're created somewhere else, and they're slid underneath a door, an electronic door. I read them. Mr. Ryan White, what's coming up in the Oregonians? You've got your piece up now about the stopping the put a bird on it.
Yes, stopping put a bird on it. Google has moved into town with this thing called Hotpot, kind of a community blog, and they're doing some free shows. You've got to follow them on Twitter, but some really cool shows. The Thermals next Monday at the roller rink at Oaks Park.
And so is it a thing sponsored by Google or just
that? Yeah, but what you've got to do is you've got to follow them on Twitter, and then they're going to tell you when you can go get your free wristband to get you into the show. And so they've got Red Fang coming up on the Portland Spirits, whatever the hell it's called, and then the Dandy Warhols somewhere downtown coming up later next month.
Are the Dandy Warhols still actively, I mean, are they still together as a band
and making records and stuff? Right,
really? So
yeah.
They are?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, they were, I assume it was a joke, but the original working title for the record, according to their webpage, was Pastor of Muppets.
It's fantastic. No. Awesome. Read them in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Seth Aaron from Project Runway. And tomorrow we'll talk about we'll do a whole bunch of TV talks. We'll do our house recap. We'll talk a little bit about just a touch about last week's Justified. And then we'll talk about the Breaking Bad season one and so forth. And this is all true. Let's see. The Rick Emerson radio program comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, which is made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So continue to spread the word. It never goes unappreciated. And don't forget, back again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News. It is Monday, February 21st, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.